It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Florence Ion from All About Android is here. Harry McCracken from Fast Company. Sam Abul-Samid is here, also from Navigant Research. He's our car expert. And there is a lot to talk about. How Trump's tweet could save ZTE, driver assist in the Cadillac, Microsoft Timeline, and Google's uncanny duplex. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 666, recorded Sunday, May 13th, 2018. Leave John Legend alone. This Week in Tech is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/twit. And by LegalZoom. Get your dream business up and running or take control of your family's future with LegalZoom. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter TWiT at checkout. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Go to Texture.com/TWiT to start using your free trial today. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech. The show where we cover the week's tech news and all in-studio panel today. It's a good thing because we have a massive studio audience from all over the world, including Australia and New Zealand and Sweden and Marie Domingo. Everybody's here. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not the same as Santo Domingo. Harry McCracken is here. He's the technologizer, fastcompany.com. Great to see you, Harry.
Great to be here.
Are you guys going to hire Andy Iannocco or what?
He's doing some stuff for us.
I know. I love it.
I expect to go back and edit a piece of his tonight.
Oh, you're his editor.
Hopefully.
Be nice. Be kind.
He's a very clean writer.
I bet he is. Oh. I bet he's perfect.
He's Andy right from the start, which is not true of everybody.
He has a voice, doesn't he? I can read his stuff and I hear Andy in my
head. I've worked with people where you have to insert their voice into the story where they leave it out.
But how do you do that?
You have to channel them.
Use Google Prosody?
We had a writer at PC World who shall remain nameless who had a great voice, but sometimes he forgot to put in his own voice.
And interesting.
You had to ask him to put his voice in or put it in for him.
But you knew how to do that.
After a while, if you work with somebody
long
enough.
You learn how to do somebody's voice.
Andy, so far, you don't need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Dvorak is really good. You read his stuff, you hear John, like, eh. you hear it. Florence Ion is also here. Always a pleasure to have you, Florence. Of course, the host of All About Android, Oh That Flow, on the Twitter, and she writes a lot of places.
I do. I wrote a piece for Engadget about material theming recently this week.
And you had a big birthday.
I did.
Happy birthday.
I did. Thank you.
But you're not a mother. I just want everybody to know.
I'm not.
We do say happy mother to all of our mothers.
I do have a lot of tech children at home.
Do you want to say hi to your mom?
Sure. Hi, Mom.
Do you want to say hi to your mom?
She might actually be watching. Hey, Mom.
Hey, happy Mother's Day, Harry McCracken's mother. Mrs. McCracken?
We called to wish her a happy Mother's Day on the way up here.
I haven't called
my
mom
yet. And
she
said she'd be watching, so she better be.
Nice. Where does she live?
She lives in Newton, Massachusetts.
Newton. Love Newton. Which looks like Newtown. No? No, it's spelled Newton. Newton. Like Fig Newton.
Fig Newtons are named after
like
Newton.
Like what?
No. That's where they're from.
Already we've learned
something. At least today we learned.
At least people in Newton claim so.
Were they first made in Newton, Massachusetts?
I seem to remember a story about Nabisco naming cookies after different towns.
Oh. See, I always thought it was named after Sir Isaac Newton.
Because
that's very famous, right? The fig hit him.
It was an apple.
Oh, that's Sam. Now I'm going to try to do your name right. Abul-Samid.
Very good, Delio.
Are my emphasis in the prep?
Absolutely. You know, I have heard my name mangled so many ways over the course of my lifetime by so many teachers and other people that I've long since caring.
Well, I realized.
As long as you get it close.
It's Arabic, good. Right? Yes, I realized if you divide it up properly, A-B-U, Abu,
mm-hmm.
L, yep. Samid.
Yes.
So I suddenly realized, I can pronounce that.
Yeah.
People look at it and they go,
just break it up into three syllables.
Syllables. It's all about the syllables.
Yeah.
So breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, Donald Trump, this is not political, folks, tweeted,
President Xi of China and I are working together to give massive Chinese phone company ZTE a way to get back into business fast. Do you, too many jobs in China lost. Make China great. Commerce Department has been instructed to get it done. Now, if you don't know the backstory on this, the Commerce Department, the United States Commerce Department, was the one that practically put ZTE out of business, saying American companies can no longer buy or sell ZTE products. And in fact, it looks like ZTE, or it looked like ZTE might go out of business. I like ZTE's. The Axon's great.
And
apparently they.
And maybe Google can't supply Android to ZTE.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, well, they probably, you know, the President Xi probably told them that, you know, unless you back off on ZTE, then you won't get any more iPhones shipped out of China.
Could be. Could be.
Can you imagine the uproar if suddenly iPhones stopped arriving from China?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow, that would be wild.
That would.
They can't do that.
Silicon Valley would just fall apart.
He can't do that.
It would just crumble underneath. Exactly. It would just fall into a sinkhole.
We'd have to all use Pixels.
Which would be
and
great.
What's wrong with that?
For me.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
this is good.
Photos.
Pixel.
Yep.
iPhone. Yeah, I knew it. But that's good.
But I have a Pixel and I need to install Android P on it.
Android P, I was just talking with Flo before the show, because unaccountably, the host of All About Android, you're still using Android Oreo.
To be fair, I test a lot of IoT and I need my apps to be stable.
No, that's completely fair. I think that's completely reasonable.
But I do need to get on the Android P train.
We should mention the P train.
Yes.
See, this is why they've got to quickly get a dessert associated with this.
I agree.
You definitely don't want to leave that one hanging out there.
Definitely need to name it Google.
Yeah, you got to stop saying Android.
Let's say Android Pie.
Pie.
We'll put that in the ether.
Pie.
Maybe they'll actually Android go with
pie.
It.
I'm going to call it.
And can you? And you know, for the next year, you guys on All About Android would be able to taste a different kind of pie every week.
We begged. We asked if they could please name it pie so that Jason and I get to eat pie every week.
Because you're getting really sick of the weird flavored Oreos. Holy cow.
I get sick of it just listening to some of those bizarre
every
flavors.
Wednesday morning I come in and there's a half-eaten bag of like dog biscuit flavored Oreos or peppermint schnapps Oreos.
I wish. Give me some nice little rum Oreo.
Is there one that was good?
Yes.
There was one last week, wasn't it?
Yeah. There was a chocolate hazelnut that was really good.
Okay.
Nutella-ish like. There was one we ate that was expired, 2 years past expired. Yeah.
But there was one just like a week or two ago that you guys gave 9 or 9.5 to.
I don't even remember.
It was something chocolate.
There's
I don't think it was the Nutella.
Oh, it was the Hostess cup.
That's it, the cupcakes.
That was a 2-year-old one.
Was it? Yes. It was 2 years old?
Yeah, but it was still good.
There is an Oreo DQ Blizzard cream.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Is that an Oreo or is it a Blizzard?
It's an Oreo. It's a limited edition Oreo, which was put out 8 years ago. Maybe if you still had it, it'd be
I'm sure there's probably still a couple packages on eBay that
the Dulce de Leche Oreo was good. I had that.
Yes,
that
was yummy.
Great. Birthday cake, candy cane, candy corn. Those were disgusting. The candy corn Oreos, those were awful. Berry, lemon twist, Neapolitan. Good Lord.
Banana split.
Oh, when are you having the SpongeBob Oreos in?
Oh, 2014. I don't know if I want to eat those now. I might have.
So to get back to the news.
Yes.
The reason ZTE was in trouble.
Yes.
Is because the Commerce Department said ZTE's using its hardware to spy on America.
Well, also, they violated the sanctions against both Iran.
And North Korea.
And then I think they were supposed to, the people who actually made those decisions were supposed to get in trouble or be penalized, and ZTE did not penalize them.
This is just so crazy that I think he got a phone call from President Xi. I think that's, he did, in fact. And then the president tweets and everything. It's like, he's like a guy who's sitting in a chess game and just throws the table in the air and then says, now let's try playing. It's crazy. Well, but I like ZTE phones, but I'm still, I don't know if I should buy a ZTE phone.
Well, why would you? Well, ZTE is going to be in trouble after this anyway, because we've got other Chinese brands that are like coming up the wayside that don't have these problems.
But
AKA one plus one.
Xiaomi might eventually start selling.
Or yeah, who knows?
Xiaomi, Huawei.
They want to sell smart home stuff here now.
OnePlus.
So.
OnePlus.
They're already supplying all the scooter companies with scooters.
Right.
You know,
they're all using Xiaomi
scooters.
I thought
it was really interesting when Google I.O. this week announced that they were going to make Android P available as a public beta. It wasn't just to Pixel phones. It included, by the way, Oppo phones or OnePlus. Is that one? Mm-hmm. Not is that OnePlus?
Mm-hmm,
no,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the OnePlus.
Same Oppo. Manufacturing line. Yeah,
Oppo's the Chinese phone company.
95% of Android phones, except the 5% that were missing were
Samsung
phones.
No Samsung.
Yep, very peculiar.
You noticed that, did you?
Mm-hmm.
As did I.
And was that a technical decision?
Well, Samsung right now the S9 is not using treble. It hasn't been trebleized.
You think treble's the issue?
Yeah, apparently it's the reason why they're able to do what they're able to do is because of all the phones that are compatible with the P beta have been trebleized. They've separated the low end.
Maybe I should have Flo explain what treble is. What is Project Treble? Or do you want to do it, Sam? Flo does not want to do it, I can tell.
You'll have a better time explaining it.
With Project Treble, which was part of Android N, they separated the low level kernel stuff, the operating stuff, the high end, the surface level interface components.
Yeah.
And so now you can swap out the low level components without touching the high end, the surface stuff. And so that's why they're able to insert the Android P operating system components without touching the interface components.
We actually had this chat with Google earlier this week when we sat down with them for All About Android, and Stephanie Saad Cuthbertson, she mentioned that Project Treble is the reason that 95% of the Android phones were able to get Android P like that. So the 5% that's missing is Samsung, which...
Because they didn't do that separation when they implemented Android P.
But it speaks volumes too of what I mean. I'm thinking it's a reason.
Also, huge news because Google says now that they think some vast percentage of Android phones they're going to be able to require the security updates too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so from now on that'll be part of the deal.
They've updated the licensing agreement to require them to push out the monthly security patches.
This is all very, very good news.
Very good.
This has been a real problem. I mean, one of the advantages iPhone has, and one of the reasons security experts stick with iPhone. I even talked to somebody who said, I wouldn't go to DEF CON without an iPhone. I would never bring an Android phone to DEF CON. It'd be just too dangerous.
Take a Nokia 3310.
Yeah, that's safe. It's because Apple mandates the updates and is very quick to update, and most Apple users update immediately. But Android, there's probably 3/4 of the Android user base doesn't have updatable phones.
It's not like amazing a decade into Android that they're still trying to figure out some of this stuff.
Well,
even though it is hard.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's kind of a double-edged sword. I think it's because Android was open source.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the openness makes it a lot more challenging.
Which is good, right? We want it to be open. But at the same time, that means any Joe can put an Android device. And they don't have to do updates.
And I'm still not clear on to what degree that you can legitimately blame carriers or handset makers.
I think it's all
for
of
not
the above.
This seriously
it's both.
It's all of the above.
It's a little bit. It comes with the territory, but also it may be due to intransigence or slowness on the part of the third-party companies.
Well, and when you sell a phone for $30 or $50. You don't want to be updating it. You just want it. It's a disposable product.
Especially, if you're not getting recurring revenues from that device.
So a lot of those devices were just really disposable were sold, especially in the
Do the higher-end phones have a better record of getting updates?
Yes.
Not all of them, though.
But not all of them. Like
Samsung tends to be slow. They tend to be slow on the operating system updates. They're pretty good on the monthly security updates.
Depends on the carrier. Verizon has not been good about pushing those security updates on the Galaxy phones, unfortunately. Or at least in my experience.
You know what else is not good? This Windows machine. The mouse keeps dying on me. Well, anyway, there's our breaking...
This is our breaking mouse.
I put a new battery in. Yeah.
Where's the one you had the last time we were here with the microphone and the speaker in it?
Oh, yeah, the Skype mouse.
Yeah.
I keep that around. I'm going to be podcasting with that in my old age.
Oh, this is a little culture for computer.
John, could you give me a wired mouse? Yeah, thank you. Because I can't do anything on this beautiful computer. I'm just going to type it
in. It is a beautiful screen.
Well, and the keyboard's died too, so it must have something to do with Bluetooth stuff. Thank you. We're going to have a wired mouse in here. Yeah, I can't even touch the screen. There we go. What the hell's going on? Is anybody else here using Windows?
I am.
Chrome OS.
Chrome OS, iPad Pro.
Yeah,
is it just me?
You know, if it wasn't a work issued computer, I probably wouldn't be.
I just didn't mention Sam works for Navigant. Mm-hmm. You're an analyst in the auto sector, yeah?
Yes, I cover, I lead our mobility research service. So I cover autonomous and connected vehicles and automotive cybersecurity and mobility services. And also, you know, on the side, I do some writing for Forbes. I write a monthly column for automotive engineering and do a podcast.
Nice. He took me for a ride in the new Cadillac CT6.
Ooh.
And the reason we were trying it out, in fact, well, you'll see this on the new screensavers on Saturday, is it has kind of similar to the Tesla Autopilot, has level two autonomy. What is that, level two?
So level two means it's partially automated, so it can do speed control and directional control combined. So in this case, in the case of the Super Cruise, it has adaptive cruise control, so it'll maintain your distance to the vehicle in front of you, maintain your speed, and it'll also stay in the center of the lane. So as you're driving down the road, comes to a curve, it automatically steers for you. So the Cadillac is the first vehicle, production vehicle, that is actually designed for hands-off. So the Tesla, you're actually supposed to keep your hands on the wheel. You can take it off for a few seconds at a time, and it'll start alerting you. The Cadillac is actually designed to be hands-off. Because it has a driver monitor camera. It works very much like Face ID on the iPhone X. So there's infrared emitters and an infrared camera on the steering column. And it makes sure that you're watching the road. And if you stop watching the road, tell them what happens, Leo.
And by the way, it was hard to stop watching the road. I looked over to Sam, but every once in a while we're at the highway speed, 65 miles an hour. It's like, I have to look at the road. Finally, I put my fingers in front of my eyes and I peeked.
No!
But that was enough to trick the camera into thinking I wasn't looking. And then the bar goes red. Your seat goes,
wake up.
It was quite a thing.
I was very impressed by it.
It did a good job, actually. Yeah. And one of the problems I've always had with the Tesla, and you told me this, I didn't know this. All the cars that have your hands are on the wheel sensors, I just assumed it was some sort of capacitive sensor that it can tell you're touching it. It's not. It's that you have to actually move the wheel a little bit. It has a torque sensor, Sam told me. So that's why when I'm on the... Every driver on the Tesla doesn't know my hands on the wheel unless I kind of jerk the wheel. Well, a lot of good that is. So I like this Cadillac.
The Cadillac actually does have capacitive sensors in the steering wheel.
Yeah.
So
it knows.
Yeah.
And it's looking in my eyes to see if I'm paying attention. I thought that was really
impressive.
And it
even works through sunglasses and everything. I've driven
but
with sunglasses.
It's interesting. A lot of the automakers are being, not surprising given the current news, very slow about releasing these kind of autonomous features, self-driving features.
Yeah, they're starting to realize that the more automation you put in the vehicles that's short of full automation, what happens is people start to become very complacent. And even if you tell them, they tell Tesla owners, you know, it's a driver assist system, you know, keep your hands on the wheel, watch the road, you know, be ready to take over.
Tesla had a guy who was sitting in the passenger seat. He would turn on auto drive.
That wasn't Tesla. That was a court in the UK.
The court said you can't drive anymore.
Yeah, they took away his license for 18 months.
What a nitwit!
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta try it like once.
No, you don't.
Maybe in a parking lot.
That's the thing. You know, if somebody wants to do something on a parking lot or on a private test track, I have no problem with that.
Totally. Absolutely.
Don't go out on public roads around it because you're putting other people at risk, you know, and that's just not right. That's just idiotic.
There was another Tesla accident we should probably mention again. And the question that is, I think, still unknown is whether the driver was using autopilot, but the car rammed into a
fire truck.
Fire truck?
Yeah. It's the second time in the last several months that's happened.
The fire truck was stopped. It was going at 60 miles an hour, apparently no braking before impact. Not known if autopilot was engaged. The driver was injured but is alive.
Well, the thing is, even if just the adaptive cruise control was active and not the full autopilot.
It should stop.
It won't, because the radar sensor for the cruise control is designed to, especially at higher speeds, when you're at highway speeds, is designed to ignore stationary objects. Because the great thing about radar is it lets you measure the distance to objects and the speed of those objects.
So if the car's not moving, it ignores it that you're going to run into?
Well, it ignores anything that has zero velocity. Mm. Think about it. I mean, if you're driving down the road,
you don't want
that sign on the side of the road
on.
Has zero velocity. Yeah. You don't want it constantly slamming on the brakes.
Okay.
So at highway speeds, when you're at that speed, the presumption is that that, you know, especially if you're going at that speed, that everything else around you should also be moving. Everything of interest should also be moving.
Right.
So it starts to ignore the static objects, like, you know, things that would be on the side of the road, or in this case, a fire truck. So clearly, in this case, the person was driving too fast. They had cruise control on at too high a speed in a place where, you know, they shouldn't have been.
Yep.
And
it doesn't look like they're on the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing I've had, you know, I drive a lot of different cars and I try out all the driver assist systems, but, you know, as an engineer by training, you know, I spent a lot of years working on these kinds of systems, and I know what to look for. I know what I'm looking for. And so whenever I'm trying these things out, my foot is always hovering over the brake pedal. I'm always ready.
Yeah.
Because I want to see.
Me too.
So I try these things out to see what they'll do. And most vehicles will do the same thing if you're using adaptive cruise control.
Right.
If you're coming up to an intersection and there's cars stopped there, once it gets within range of the radar, if those vehicles aren't moving, it'll ignore them. And if you don't hit the brakes, it'll keep on going.
They should put this in the non-existent Tesla manual.
Well, they do put it in the manuals on other cars.
I mean, I drive with cruise control always with my.
It wasn't in the brochure.
Yeah. It was regular cruise control.
Right.
Why are you driving like that? Not, I mean,
when I use like the stupid parallel parking feature on my Ford Focus, I'm always assuming that it's going to crash into a car, and I
does
I
it
have
work?
My hands on the wheel and my feet on the pedals.
It works though, right?
Does it work?
Works great. Yeah. I finally realized I don't have to do that.
I rear-ended a vehicle, or front-ended a vehicle from the rear end of a Ford on the Ford test track with Ford engineers sitting in the vehicle. Yeah. I hit, laughing at me. Because another thing they don't tell you is if after it parks, unless you stop the car, it will continue to roll backwards.
So,
the newer systems don't do that anymore.
So they should have said, and then once you're parked, you know, put your foot on the brake and turn the car off. It was idling back and it just kept rolling backwards.
Oh.
How long will it be until these types of accidents are not in the news?
Well, they should be in the news, I think, at this point.
Right now,
I think,
yes.
But like, I think this is
5 years so from now,
would this be a news story?
Probably not in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, two teens died on Tuesday. This guy got in a crash on Friday. In between that time, thousands of people have died in auto crashes.
Well, the thing you have to keep
or
in
hundreds
mind.
Hundreds, anyway.
You have to keep in mind is how many miles we actually drive every year. Just in the United States alone, the last couple of years, we drive 3.2 trillion miles a year. And we had in 2015, we had almost 3.2 trillion miles and 6.3 million accidents. So that's one accident every 500,000 miles of driving.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, when you put it in that context, yes, 37,000 people died. But we've got 270 million vehicles on the road driving 3 trillion miles. The chances of actually getting into an accident at all, or worse, dying in an accident, are actually remarkably slim.
Still, we would like to make that number
absolutely
smaller.
And we've made tremendous progress over the last 40 years. Since 1975, it was the number of people that died for every 100 million miles of driving was about 5.5 people for every 100 million miles. Now it's 1.1 person fatality for every 100 million miles. So we've cut it by 80% in the last 40 years.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's back airbags and ABS.
Airbags, ABS, better structures, you know, the crash structures, you know, the occupant protection regulations. And it's all because of those regulations and requiring people to wear seatbelts, cracking down on drunk drivers. You know, but still, even of the vehicle occupants that died in crashes, 46% of those were unbelted.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's about 22,000 people that died. So, you know, over 10,000 people died because they weren't wearing seatbelts.
Isn't that telling? We're going to take a break. When we come back, there were two big developer conferences this week. We mentioned a little bit about Google's, but also Microsoft. Bill, we'll talk about the things we found out, not so much from Microsoft, a lot from Google, the controversies they raised.
Mm-hmm.
Great panel here. Sam, it's so nice to have you talking about cars. For a senior analyst at Navigant Research, Sam Abu El Samid, from the fabulous All About Android show, Florence Ion.
Don't forget Material.
And Material. I don't like to plug Material. I don't know why. No.
From Andy's Material. On there, too.
I know. Two of our hosts do a podcast for another network.
I'm going to plug it. It's an underground podcast.
Because I'm a generous guy. It's on relay@.fm.
Yep.
And I love Mike Early, and it's fine with me. I'm just being silly. Thank you for being here, Florence. And, of course, from Fast Company, the technologizer himself, Harry McCracken. Our show today brought to you by Ring Video Doorbell. I love the Ring. You know, they just put out a new app that takes the neighbor stuff out of Ring and puts it in a separate app so that you can keep an eye on neighbors and neighbors' houses. The Ring Doorbell, we got one a couple of years ago now, and it's the best thing I ever did. It was easy to install. It replaced the doorbell on my house on the front door. Now when somebody comes to the door, I can see them ringing. When we were in Japan, somebody drove over our mailbox. We have a rural mailbox, and somebody clobbered it. But I had video, not only of that, but of the person coming to the door to apologize. So that was awesome. And if I needed to, I could have gone to the police as well with that video. In fact, that happens all the time with the Ring Video Doorbell. It is a way not only of keeping an eye on your property, of keeping an eye on packages, of speaking and hearing with people who are at your front door, whether they ring the doorbell or not. When the UPS guy comes, I say, hey, leave it right there. I'll be right out. It's awesome. But it also becomes a great security device for keeping an eye on people and intruders. In fact, when they see the Ring Video Doorbell, they often turn tail and go the other way. Now we can add even more security to the home with Ring's floodlight and spotlight cam. They let you build a ring of security around your entire property. The same camera, microphone, speaker, and they've added a siren and lights, motion-sensitive lights. So when somebody's around the side, it lights up. You can see them. You get a notification on your phone, even if you're in Japan or anywhere in the world, and you can speak to them. And if they don't run away, you can even play a very loud, I think it's 110 dB siren, and scare them off. We've got a great deal on the Ring of Security kits, which combine a Ring Video Doorbell and one, two, or three of the Ring Security cams. Just go to ring.com/twit, ring.com/twit, and you'll get up to $150 off. Pick your Ring of Security kit and save right now at ring.com/twit. I like to look at the Ring Twitter feed because there's always fun stuff. Because they post videos of things happening. Let me see. There was one of a guy about to steal something off the front porch, and then they see the Ring camera, and they literally turn around. Ring.com/twit. Leo Laporte, we're talking the tech news. Microsoft's build, 3 hour, 45 minute keynote.
Wow.
So no bathroom breaks, right?
Wow.
No, they did. They had an exercise break.
Yeah, they did.
So long they had somebody come on stage and tell people to stretch.
Yeah.
Here's a tip.
That's crazy.
Here's a tip to CEOs out there. If your keynote is so long you need to have an exercise guru give people a break, you maybe want to cut it a little bit.
Just a little bit.
The message bit of gets editing. Diluted. Did you see anything that you thought was exciting, Harry, at the
at Build
keynote?
Yeah. Well, my colleague Mark Sullivan attended Build while I was at I.O., but
that was another problem. Of course, we had these overlapping developers conferences.
I think the Your Phone stuff is interesting. Mm-hmm. The idea of your Windows PC kind of becoming a front end for your phone is intriguing. It sounds, I mean, there will be an iPhone version. I assume the iPhone version of this idea will be pretty limited just because Apple will not give the functionality to Microsoft it needs to let you do things like messaging, and that the Android version will be more interesting because it's possible technically to build stuff.
Somebody called me, it's funny, on the radio show today saying, I want to be able to send text messages from my desktop. And that's kind of, you would think that's easy. Verizon has an app. I guess some of the other companies have an app. But this is a much better way to do it. If you've got an Android device, you have this Your Phone app, and you can sync your phones with Windows 10.
You can use apps like Mighty Text and Signal, you know, has a desktop app too.
Yeah, but so. He didn't want to make his friends install another app. He wanted to use SMS.
Well, I mean, Mighty Text, you can hook that, connect that with your Android phone and use that. My wife
too.
Does that.
Yeah. What is it?
It's Text.2.
On my phone. And what was it? Pulse button or what was that called?
There's a bunch of them that'll work.
For Apple, hey, it's fine. Just buy a Macintosh. And then you can use messages. You'll be happy. If you don't have a Macintosh, why not?
And the number Android two? Users, text to.
Okay. But this, your phone will do that. It also will sync notifications, which is nice. Pushbullet is the one I was trying to think of.
Yeah, that's a subscription. You have to pay
for that one.
Yeah, to get full functionality.
So when does your phone come out? It says feature goes into beta this week, expected to launch publicly this fall.
Okay. You know, you got more evidence that instead of trying to get everybody to be entirely Windows-centric. Microsoft is trying to be really, really good about letting you use all the devices you actually want to use and helping to stick them all together.
It's really the new Microsoft.
Well, yeah.
To use this new feature, though, do you have to use the Microsoft launcher on an Android phone for that to work?
Because I hope not.
I was intrigued when I heard about the ability to connect your phone to Windows 10 with the latest update, with the 1803 update. But then I started looking at it and realized, oh, I've got to use the Microsoft launcher, and I don't want to do that. I like the stock Pixel launcher, mm-hmm. and so I haven't bothered. But
we'll find out.
Maybe we've got 2.5 quarters to go until we find out.
Here's something nobody wants. Cortana and Alexa will be working together.
I mean, they can be friends.
Does somebody want that?
I mean, eventually.
How do you get to Alexa by echo by saying, what do you, you have to say, hey, Cortana, I want to talk to Amazon?
Or Cortana, open Alexa.
Oh, that's crazy. Or Alexa, open Cortana.
That feels mean to Cortana.
Actually, you're right. It does.
It's weird.
You have to ask Assistant 1 to talk to Assistant 2.
Yeah. It's like, well, anyway, I'm not going to equate that to anything. But
it would be nice if you could just, even if you're sitting at PC, say, hey, you know, Alexa, and have, but you can't. You have to say, Cortana.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Alexa now. Go away.
Go away now. I don't need
you. But once they're there, they work. Is this another example, Harry, of Microsoft reaching across the aisle? Or, I mean,
in this case, it's very much in Microsoft's interest, just because there aren't all that many people who lead Cortana-centric lives, and Alexa has such a huge lead in this stuff that Microsoft has nothing to lose. And probably Amazon is not terrified by the idea of Cortana overtaking Alexa.
Oh, no.
So why not do it?
More buying power that way. Now you can buy stuff through your Windows PC.
Yeah. As long as Alexa is the ultimate endpoint, then they don't care.
Precisely.
I would love to see Alexa and Google Assistant and Siri all offer similar functionality with each other, which seems really unlikely. I'm glad this is happening, even though I don't use Cortana very much.
I've always said that really what you want access to all of the capabilities of all the assistants. So what you really want is a kind of an ombudsman assistant, a mediator that you deal with, that's your assistant that knows, oh, for that, I need to get Cortana.
It understands the syntax of every command.
Yeah, and then you just let it deal with it. That, I mean, surely somebody could do that. Maybe it'll be Microsoft, given this new attitude of, really, if you think about it, Google's not going to do it. Apple's not going to do it. Amazon's not going to do it. Microsoft would be the logical company to do it because... They're losing the race.
And they don't have anything to lose.
Nothing to lose.
They don't have a vested interest in a platform.
Right.
A hardware
platform. They don't want lock-in.
Yeah.
They want lock-in to Windows, I guess, but I don't think they even care about that
anymore. Don't think they do either.
I don't think they care about that.
I saw somebody say that Windows was only mentioned 12 times in that 3-hour, 45-minute keynote.
Wow.
Imagine how many hundreds of times Windows was announced.
I bet Azure was mentioned.
You mean how many times Ballmer mentioned it
Microsoft
in the keynotes that he headed?
I think he mentioned it that many times in 1 minute.
Yes.
Windows.
They're so over everything rotating around Windows.
Windows is the partner tech to everything now.
Is that, though, also kind of the sign of the times? I mean, even Apple...
Yeah.
Is making more money now on services than they do on Macintosh plus iPad together.
Well, they get more revenue from services. They're not actually making much profit on it because the number.
Oh, wait a minute. They've got to be because they get 30% of every app sold. That's pure profit.
Yeah, well,
almost.
But they're, I mean, well, especially like on the. I think a big chunk of that growing services revenue is from Apple Music.
That they make no money on.
Yeah,
for that,
they're probably margins are probably single digits at best.
iCloud, they probably make money.
Yeah, but all the other stuff,
Apple Pay, they make money on.
Yeah, they've got a lot of revenue, but the part that's actually profit from that is probably of the total is probably no more than 10 or 15%.
And Apple's used to very high margin hardware. That's they love that, right?
I exchanged a couple of emails with Jason Snell the other day. I was asking about that because he covers the Apple financial calls, the quarterly.
Oh, he does those beautiful graphs.
Yeah, and I asked him about that. If he knew, the number that they quote, for the services, that's the total revenue that they bring in.
Right.
But it's not their cut of it. It also includes the 70% that they pay to developers, or 85% in some cases if it's the subscriptions after the first year, things like that.
Okay.
So because
did Apple, did they reveal how much of that was profit? No.
No. No, they never break stuff down. They never break out where the profits are coming from. They just tell you this is our total profit, this is our total revenue, and you know, the revenue from some of the sectors.
I admit that they're probably not getting, you know, iPhone level profits out of it, but they've got to be getting especially Apple Pay in the App Store.
Yeah, I mean, if you grow it enough,
pretty
profitable. Even, you know, even 10% of a huge number is still a hell of a lot of dollars.
It was almost $9 billion. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll take it for a quarter, $300 million a month profit. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
And it's not what you make right now, but, you know. It's
I could kick a pay cut. Timeline for iOS and Android. Timeline's part of the new 1803, the new spring update for Windows. I played with it, but I don't really grok it yet. I guess the idea is it keeps track of what you've done, what apps you've
done. It's a history of your activities, and it's coming to iPhones and Android phones.
So you'll tell you what apps you've used?
I think that's a theory, although, again, on iOS, I am fuzzy about how Microsoft can do anything even sort of similar to that.
I see right here, the Verge article says, on iOS, it'll be a tab within the Edge browser. Oh, great.
So it's your Edge history.
Yeah, yeah. So good news. Does anybody use Edge on iPhone?
Only when Chrome isn't working.
You have to be nuts. Well, I don't even use Chrome. You can't even. Everything links to Safari, no matter what.
Everything's using the WebKit browser, WebKit engine.
And it is. It's all just different skins on WebKit. Yeah. On Android, Timeline will be part of the Microsoft launcher, so you won't be able to use your nice Pixel launcher. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I can live without Timeline. Yeah.
Microsoft also told devs they're going to give more money to them in the store. We were talking just now about how Apple makes 30% on sales on the App Store. Microsoft says, we're only going to take 5%.
Wow.
Will it work? 5% of nothing.
It's nothing.
But 70% of
I'll be curious to see what percentage of progressive web apps are actually paid for apps.
Did they didn't talk much at the keynote about PWA.
Actually, I was struck by that. I did not go to Build, but I did do a story about Starbucks working with Microsoft.
For the Starbucks app.
Because part of that, like Starbucks is using 50 different Azure services. And I did my story because Starbucks had a very high presence at Build. And one of the sessions that they led was one on how Starbucks got rid of its Windows app and built a progressive web app. And I was like, this really is another sign of the new Microsoft, that at Build, they're positioning it as a good thing to ditch your Windows native app and do a progressive web apps.
That's what you do when you're in trouble. But Microsoft, more people run Windows than any other operating system by a long margin.
Yeah, but
On computers, on laptops and desktops, but probably not overall anymore. I mean, it's probably
because of phones and tablets Chromebooks.
Yeah, Android and iOS, probably outnumber.
Oh, come on,
Windows.
There's a billion Windows users. It's a huge number of Windows.
Yeah, but you
got
2 billion Android devices,
a
billion and a half iOS devices.
2 billion Android devices alone.
Progressive web apps were also there's quite a bit on them at I/O.
Yeah, so that's a big Google push.
I was not entirely sure whether PWAs were going anywhere, but after those two keynotes, I needed to take another look at it.
Well, I think for our point of view, we spent a lot of money and effort making a website, but we don't have an app. We actually spent a lot of money making an app that turned out to be crap, and I didn't want to release it. But I think the next thing for us to consider, if we wanted a Twit app, would be make a progressive web app.
M.twit.com.
Yeah. You go to the website. It downloads onto your phone. There's service workers on your phone. They make sure that it works. It's a podcast app, so even if you're not online,
Twitter,
you can still listen.
PWA, is vastly better than the old Windows Twitter app.
Is that m.twitter.com?
Yep, that's all I use.
That's what you use?
Because I get no notifications, and it keeps me from going on Twitter when I shouldn't be.
Oh, you use it because it's limited.
Yes. No. I use it because it doesn't put the app on my phone. Yeah. Yes, I use it because it's limited.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's right. That's why you use
it. Well, it's good for me.
But in theory, PWA, progressive web apps, would be as capable as a desktop app. Or native app, I should say.
I'm sure there's a list of things they can't do because they can't get access to hardware on the same level that a native app can.
It's actually up to the operating system maker, isn't it? So Google and Microsoft support it. Apple is, I think, ambivalent because they still can work on, get you locked into the
which is ironic considering where iOS started.
It's flipped. It's completely flipped. Yeah. The worm has turned, as they say. There's no worm in this Apple. The biggest surprise at the Build was that the Kinect is back.
Yes.
The Kinect, which was for one day the hottest selling consumer electronics product in the history of the world when it first came out, and then immediately tanked. I don't know how you can go from being literally the most successful consumer electronics product ever to nobody wants it. I still have my Kinect on my Xbox.
I mean, I think part of it was that developers did not really take advantage
Again,
of it.
Again, you got to have developers.
And then when the Xbox One came out, there was an even better piece of Kinect hardware, and it was part of this vision of turning the Xbox One into more of kind of a general purpose device,
right,
which Microsoft quickly gave up on.
Right.
They went back to being a meat and potatoes gaming machine.
And then discontinued the Kinect.
And originally you had to get the Kinect with your Xbox One,
and they
stopped that quickly.
Yeah.
So I think the hardware was always amazing, but it never quite developed into the ecosystem it needed to matter.
So they're going to do like an Azure Kinect, Kinect in the cloud.
How's that going to work?
You still need hardware, right? I mean, you still need the depth sensing camera and all that. Although I gather that maybe these Windows Hello cameras are Kinect-like, right? So maybe some of the PCs that have Windows Hello-capable cameras will be able to do it. So then developers will be able to send information up to the cloud. Microsoft processes the information. It's a cloud service. It's not even Kinect, probably, right? It's just a cloud service. All right, that's it. That's Microsoft. Oh, one more thing. Satya Nadella spent a significant amount of time at the beginning of the keynote talking about ethics. I thought that was interesting. I think there's a move afoot, and it's not just because of Facebook. I think a lot of people understand that for a while, software developers have been weaponizing their software to become more and more addictive. And so it's related to the Apple shareholders who went to Apple and said, you've got to make your iPhone less compelling. Your problem, where it's you can't put the thing down. People who play World of Warcraft to the point where they can't stand up anymore. People who play Candy Crush Saga while their kids are starving in the back seat. All of this has created a world where people are starting to blame technologists and technology. And so I think that's what it's a response to from Microsoft. But I think other companies are also doing this.
And Microsoft was really in front of this because at last year's build, Nadella said a lot of the same things.
Oh, really?
And he began last year's keynote by flashing up the covers of 1984 and Brave New World and talking about
we don't want to make
possibilities.
That. Yeah.
So I think that's really smart because Facebook acknowledged some of this stuff after it blew up in their face.
It's too late.
And Microsoft has confronting some of it before they have to.
Yeah. I think you make an excellent point. Yeah. We interviewed Scott Galloway, who wrote the book about what is it called? The Big Four, Carson? I think it was the four. Amazon, Facebook, Google, and I'm not sure who the fourth was.
Apple,
maybe. But about how Netflix. These companies have to, well, those are the fangs. The these companies have to start to pay attention because at some point there's going to be so much heat on and the government's going to step in, and that could be a big problem. Actually, that may have already happened
right
with GDPR.
Now,
yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about GDPR later on. That's coming this week.
I actually just sent in my next column for Automotive Engineering, which was about ethics around autonomous vehicles. Yeah, because a lot of the conversation around autonomous vehicles in engineering circles in the last few years has been how you program ethics into the autonomous systems, dealing with the trolley problem. But really, that's actually a pretty it's such a rare issue anyway that's not the real ethics problem around these things. It's actually the people. And
it's marketing. It's Tesla telling its drivers it's autopilot.
Yeah, I mean
that's the ethical concern I have.
Not trying to look at what are the potential unintended consequences of this technology. How can this stuff be misused?
Ultimately, it's going to save lives. Self-driving vehicles.
Probably.
Oh no, I'm sure it will.
Probably.
You don't think so?
I'm confident that in the long run, it will eventually probably be better.
Wow. You're really hedging it. We started that conversation because of the Cadillac. You mentioned that they only allow you to use the Super Cruise on roads, highways that they've already mapped.
Right. It's geofenced.
So even though it would probably work on other roads, they won't. And Mercedes, in fact, lets you use it on other roads. So I think that these car companies have learned a lesson, and they're being very judicious about rolling these features out.
They have to. They have lives at stake.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah,
In the talks I give is that the threshold for what defines a minimum viable product is much higher for an autonomous vehicle when than it is for a photo sharing app or something.
No, that's, that makes a lot of sense. So, good. So you feel like what Nadella said about ethics was appropriate and they're sincere, I'm sure.
It seems to be sincere rather than something that they're doing.
I always feel like they're at least thinking about it.
I always thought Tim Cook at Apple is kind of the poster child for corporate responsibility. Is that just marketing, or do you think that's
marketing.
True?
It's marketing. It's so marketing.
The host of All About Android.
I think the fact that they promote it as much as they do is marketing and PR spin.
Yeah.
But I think that he really does believe that stuff.
And I think so,
I
too.
And I think, the corporate culture of Apple is generally more in that direction. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people within Apple that would be more than happy to do the kinds of things that Facebook or Google or other companies do. But I think overall the corporate culture is probably more along the lines of what you hear from Tim and other executives at Apple.
How much did they talk about augmented or reality or what they call mixed reality? Did they talk about HoloLens at the keynote? Did they show it off? Picture of HoloLens being used. It looks like at a car manufacturer, Sam. Fusion. It's a Ford concept car. Ford's used these. I remember when we went to the Ford labs years ago, they were using virtual reality in their design labs.
Use VR stuff in their design labs to let you do the kinds of, like walk into the car and, do the, slice through the car and look at how all the parts fit together.
Yeah.
That's been commonly used for a long time. But that's stuff that's much more expensive. I mean, you could pretty much do the same thing now with, an HTC Vive or an Oculus.
Two new apps for HoloLens coming May 22nd. One is called Remote Assist, which to me, this is one of the real uses of augmented reality. It allows somebody remotely to show you how to do something using the HoloLens. So you can see what the pipe you want to fix, and then somebody's showing you how to use, how to fix it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This is literally the real life
video,
implementation of remote desktop.
Look, it's all working. So here's a happy-go-lucky worker who has no idea how to fix whatever. So she's using the augmented reality to get help. And somebody who's sitting at a Surface Book. You can't hear the audio because I'm having troubles with the audio. But
this is the sort of thing that we heard talked about with Google Glass a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's actually, these kinds of vertical enterprise applications are really the best place to be focusing on this stuff right now because of the cost and the limitations of this technology. Focus on those kinds of applications and really refine it. And then, as it gets better and more cost effective, then you can start rolling it out to consumers.
They're also doing something called Layout, which basically duplicates what ARKit and ARCore apps have been doing on iPhone and Android for a while, which is put furniture in your room. But you could do it wearing the HoloLens instead.
Or I could do it with my Pixel.
Yeah.
Just
hold up your Pixel. I don't have to wear anything.
All right. Enough of Microsoft. Let's move on to the good stuff.
The ARCore stuff on the Pixels works really well.
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, Google watched what Apple did with our ARKit. Google had attempted a much more high-end product called Project Tango that required hardware. Mm-hmm. Nobody was willing to make a Project Tango phone except there was
Lenovo.
And it wasn't
a very good phone.
No. And it was big and clunky and expensive because it had all these extra sensors. Meanwhile, Apple makes the iPhone X and puts all the AR stuff pointed at you, so it's useless, and puts out ARKit, which does adequately, simply what AR needs to do for the end, simple consumer, and gets all the attention. So Google said, well, we could do ARKit, basically, which is ARCore, which uses none of Tango. It's all in software. It's not as good. Stuff isn't quite on the surface, and, there's glitches. And then they use their regular camera and do it. And everybody's happy.
And other apps now. There's third-party apps that are using AR.
Yeah. Well,
Porsche actually has a pretty interesting AR Core app that you can get. I don't know if it's on iPhone. I think it probably is. But it's on Android to let you check out the new Mission E electric car. And so you can place the car in your room or on your driveway, and then you can actually drive it around, and you can walk around it. and you've got controls.
Virtually
on the
get in, open the door.
No, well, no,
sit down
but you,
and...
it's like you can drive it remotely, so you can have it drive across in front of you, and you can walk around it. It's pretty interesting.
Now BMW does that too.
I know that that Sam that you don't walk anywhere, but if you did, and for those of us who walk, and I only walk when we're traveling, pretty
I walk
much.
My dog every day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you get lost walking your dog.
No.
So Google showed the use of augmented reality in
yes.
Google Maps.
Yeah.
This was really nice, wasn't it?
This
actually,
was
when I'm traveling, that would be really cool.
Yes.
Well, but yeah, so it's for walking.
The whole blue dot thing, I've had so many times when I walk out of a building trying to figure out
running
which way
people?
Am I supposed to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I thought it was just me.
No.
Apparently,
no.
Everybody has this
everybody.
Problem.
Especially like in urban areas where GPS is kind of flaky.
Urban. Well, put me in the suburbs, I can't find
it.
I'm always
phones,
doing this.
I
come out of a building and I'm doing the figure eight.
Have a real problem with their compasses.
Yep. Is that it? That's why I'm always calibrating my compass.
I walk for like two blocks in the wrong direction.
In the wrong direction because it's pointing.
And I even think the dot is following me.
Yeah. I thought it was just me.
No, it's everybody.
Oh, I'm relieved. Anyway, Google apparently thinks this is a problem too because they fixed it. Or will be fixing. I think this. I just read that this is. Some people are getting this already on their phones. I don't know if this is true, but the idea is uses the camera of the phone when you're getting walking directions to pop up the street view. Go back to the previous slide, Karsten. Pops up the street view, superimposes on the picture of the street where you ought to go.
Yeah.
So there's never any ambiguity. Oh, you turn right here. I get it. And the map is still at the bottom of the screen. I think this is.
Did you see the little character too? You can have little characters that can help you around.
A little fox.
I would love it for Pokemon or like a
I love that idea.
Yes, brand it. I'm okay with branding here. If you want to bring it to me, I would love it.
We could have. I would like to follow you around, Flo. You should just.
Follow me.
I just see Flo disappearing around corners. Wait, quick. There's actually a lot of gaming stuff you could do with this. This is a kind of a...
Well, again, I think, this. Looking at this, it looks like another one of those things where they took a lesson from Google Glass, and now they've applied it in an actual useful way.
Because,
with Google Glass, you'd have one of the options in there was to use the maps and, get the directions in the little display. Now you can just do it on your phone.
Yeah. The creepiest thing...
Ah, yes, the creepy thing.
And
so,
before,
sorry, Leo, but I have to mention that Sundar did a little bit of the ethics talk at the beginning of the keynote as well.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Which is why I was
how much
maybe a
did
good
he
precursor.
Do? Well, like a few seconds.
Two sentences.
He did. He said he was reflective about the responsibilities of tech. That was it.
I am reflective about the responsibilities of tech.
I am reflective about the responsibilities of tech.
I've been thinking about it.
It could be a positive force, but we can't just be wide-eyed about the innovations that technology
and then,
creates.
So you mean he doesn't support the idea of a Google Island?
Oh, no, that was a Larry Page exclusive.
He said we can't just be wide-eyed about the innovations that technology creates.
And then Google goes on showing
yes.
you how they're going they know everything about you, how they'll incorporate it into every product. I mean, there was they never used the word privacy as far as I could remember. There was never any hat tip to the idea that you might not want Google to know everything about you. And frankly, I don't, because if I could have all of this, this cool stuff, maybe I'll put up with it. He showed some new voices. They're already available on the
six different voices, including John Legend's, which I'm still.
I can't get John Legend. No,
I'm still trying to get John Legend.
John Legend is coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming. Well, he's.
So we talked about this before. This is Google has a technique where they Sundar pointed out, and I think this is true of Siri. I think it's true of all the voice assistants that they use real humans.
Mm-hmm.
They record a bunch of stuff. Sometimes they can use that recording, but most of the time the generated voices are just patterned on the human voice. But they've gotten better at that. That's called prosody, and it is taking a human voice and overlaying the phrasing, the style, the structure on top of the automated voice to give it a more human-sounding texture. And that's what they did with John Legend. They had him in the studio. And then Pachai said, tell me what my calendar is. So obviously that's generated, I guess. I mean, they could fake the demo, but the presumption is generated. And it was in John Legend's voice.
Yeah.
It sounded just like John Legend telling you what your appointments are.
And they can do this a lot faster now, thanks to machine learning. So they can whip these things out in weeks versus it used to take months to do this. So now they can do it in weeks, which means there could be new voices further on in the future, just maybe a dozen different voices that you can choose.
I still am holding out for Scarlett Johansson. But
that would be some real fan service right there.
I know. They did have put out, at least in P, I don't know if it's available in Oreo yet, but they have they said six new voices. They have them on here. I'm trying. It's buried so deep I can never remember. I found it somewhere this morning, and I changed my, well, I can do it. My assistant voice is. Is it Florence Ion's birthday today? Let's see. These are the top. Oh, she's, I got to turn her up.
Here are the events you requested. First up, you have a calendar entry today at 3 p.m. The title is This Week in Tech Show.
That's a new voice. It still sounds like a robot, though.
It does.
It? They have new male and female voices.
You need the ums
voices.
And ahs.
That's Duplex. That's
let's
Duplex.
Go to Duplex. Now, do we know if Duplex is, how close is this to being the real?
From what I understand, it's going to roll out eventually. So I'm assuming sometime this year. But what I do know is that this is going to be the limitations of it. So this is where it's starting. Or rather the limitation, I shouldn't say limitations, but this is where it's starting out of the gate. It's going to start very simply with making reservations for you at a restaurant or booking an appointment for you. Wherever there isn't an online, if there's no online API that's available for the assistant to tap in, then that's when it does the phone call.
They were vague on stage about timing, but
yeah.
At the show, someone from Google told me they talked in terms of weeks, which
what?
Was sooner than
oh,
I
they
thought.
Said weeks.
Yes.
Now they said they have thousands of the. I'll place a little bit of this so you can hear it. They have thousands of conversations. They've been using it primarily to get business hours because apparently that's a database that's not very good. They need to update that. I'll play you what a
business. Yes, they're scraping data with the robotic voice.
And the business hours that they get. Listen, how complex some of the stuff is that they're interpreting. Oh, I can't play sound.
So Tuesday through Thursday, we're open 11 to 2 and then reopen 4 to 9.
Yes.
And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, we're open 11 to 9. And then Sunday, we're open 1 to 9.
Thank you very much, human.
But if you
goodbye.
If you can have the bot make that call one time.
And figure that out.
And then record that and parse it, and then they can put that into their database. So when you look places up in Google search, then, you see the hours and everything in there.
So let me play. This is, so Pachai says you can make a haircut appointment. Let me play this. This is an actual call.
How can I help you?
That's a human.
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Pause that for a second.
Sure, give me one.
With the up talking and everything and the gravelly voice and the
perfectly timed
that's the assistant.
Yes.
Like a little bit of vocal fry thrown in there.
A little vocal fry.
Oh, yeah. The vocal fry thing was also like, man, they really.
Stacey Higginbotham said they have up talking.
Yes.
Which is.
They talk like me.
Kind of something you want to chew, right? Is I'd like to know what time it is to, but it is a very common human trait.
Mm-hmm.
I almost said female, but I don't want you to hit me. It's a very common human trait.
Oh, I'm doing it too.
I do it too. And it felt like, and this is where they got some heat, they were actively trying to simulate, to trick, in effect, the receptionists.
The ums and it ahs.
Now, the ums and ahs are, they said in their blog post, to hide disfluencies. So when the computer is thinking, instead of just nothing, or working.
Like humans.
Yeah.
Just like humans.
When we think, we go,
Yes.
Right?
Which, by the way, those of us who do that apparently are smarter than the average bear.
Oh, is that true?
Yes, something like that.
Because I've trained myself over the years to not do it.
Apparently, it means we're very highly intellectual. We're just always thinking.
Well, I mean, the fact that you're not just spewing a string of words,
yes.
You're actually taking the time to
think. Oh, no.
To think
I'm a radio broadcaster. I just spew a string of words, and I don't ever stop because I don't have to say anything that's important because I'm talking all the time. So if I had to say it would just slow me down. So I trained myself not to say which is why you think I'm stupid.
No.
She said it. I didn't.
Anyway.
I read an article on the internet.
Let me go. According to an article on the internet, Leo's stupid.
No.
Oh, yeah. I've read that article, too. So continue on. This is, this is a Google assistant making an appointment for a haircut. And it's remarkable.
Yeah.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
That was the assistant.
Sure. What time are you looking for around?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Okay, stop.
Depending on what service she would like.
that
shuddering.
There was that one inflection was wrong on the second
yes.
time that would give it, if you knew what you were looking for. But I bet you the person at the salon.
She's working.
She's not thinking about that.
I mean, if somebody told you, okay, you're going to get three calls, one of them's a robot, that would be a giveaway.
Right.
Now, yeah. Google has responded to the heat by saying, well, we're going to announce that it's somehow, we're going to indicate that
it's Google Assistant or something.
They're still a little bit wishy-washy about exactly how they will do it. And I asked them what they were going to do, and they said transparency is important. And I asked them, does that mean that it will say it's a computer?
Well, transparency is important.
And they just repeated the statement again.
Transparency is important, yes.
After that, they were a little bit more specific and said that, yes, there will be disclosure, and they have to figure out what the phrase is.
Well, because for one thing, if you said, I'm a computer calling on behalf of Florence Ion, most people would just go, lick. Because it's like a robocall, right? Or they'd abuse you. They go, hey.
Well, and I'm sure that's probably why they were reluctant to go down that path in the first
place. But there's ways you could do it. And this is what I predict they'll do. Something like, hi, this is Google Assistant calling on behalf of Florence Ion. You wouldn't assume immediately that's a computer. That could be her assistant, her special Google assistant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it said it in kind of a fluent, natural way, you probably would just figure, oh, it's a human.
Yeah.
So I suspect that's what
they have to. Because now we have so many robocalls that we're getting, so many spam calls, which, by the way, have gone up in number.
I would hang up if it said, hi, this is Google.
I would also hang up if I heard a beep. Because I hear a lot of beeps.
Yeah, or you get those calls, where you answer and then there's a 2-second pause and then
a cruise ship is blowing in the distance.
Yeah.
You've won.
You just won a trip to Tahiti.
I wish.
Okay, listen, here's another one.
It's gotten to the point where I just don't answer calls that I don't recognize the number.
Never.
Yeah.
It's completely out of control. Yeah. Robocalling. And did you ask them if they're going to somehow keep this technology to themselves?
I'm not sure if they've talked about that yet.
Because obviously they do want to keep it to themselves, right? But how long?
Because if you license that out to somebody, it's going to get abused.
Yeah. Google, can you call 15 people in the town of Petaluma and offer them cruises and let it do it? I mean, that would be bad, right?
I don't think
Google would allow that.
I'm just thinking about the military.
What?
How this could be used.
By the military?
Yeah.
Like what?
Share your dystopian vision. I know. I kind of took it there. I did. And I don't have anything to back it up other than
the military. Here is Duplex calling
a
restaurant.
No, you're right, though. I mean, there will be, all kinds of abuses of it, whether it's,
by
intelligence services or police or just scammers.
The same way this is extracting data out of people. This is extracting tangible data in that sense.
And what happens when the cruise scam guy can use this technology so you don't know it's a scam?
Well, that's why Google has to keep it to themselves, right?
But can you really do that?
Well,
yeah, that's what I mean.
If Google can invent it,
you're right.
Somebody else from developing,
but nobody can do it as well as Google, I think. I think this
probably not.
But here's the example: Google has face recognition, which could be used, and they don't allow it. Could be used to creep on girls, right? And they don't let that. You can't do it, even though Google has that ability. Now others have developed that same. In China, they've got the same recognition, but Google is not letting that out of the. That cat out of the bag. But it never has.
Some startup will build something similar, and it might not be as good.
I think that's the key on this, is that Google has a huge lead over everybody else. The other thing I think is important.
That's certainly true.
And I'm going to play this. I'm going to take a break. When we play the next one, I think Google just passed the Turing test, is what I think. And I know
just thinking that at Google I.O.
Some other people have said that. Well, you and I were here during the keynote talking about it. Others have noted this. The Turing test, which is, by the way, by most artificial intelligence researchers rejected as a reasonable way to test for successful AI. But I think it's a kind of, general man on the street way of doing it, which the idea is, if I sat you down, Harry, and I played and I drew a curtain and had you have a conversation with a human and a computer, could you tell which one was the human, which was the computer? If that's a test, and I think it's a fairly reasonable test. I think this next call, which I'm going to play in a second, is the closest thing I've ever heard to passing the Turing test. And we know that the humans that the Google assistant called did not at any point say, are you a computer? No. They thought they were talking to a human. Well, you hear this next one, but first, a word from Blue Apron. We're gonna have a lovely dinner tonight for Mother's Day. I'm gonna cook it, but the beauty part is, I don't have to shop. I don't have to find a recipe. I don't have to do any meal planning. I've got my Blue Apron box. That means I've got every ingredient. I've got the recipe in front of me. It's under 40 minutes, and I'm going to cook a meal. And the thing is, the house is going to smell great. I'll light the candles. I'll put the tablecloth out, the silver, the good china, the good silverware. And it's going to be the best Mother's Day ever. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. It is a great way for you to, even if you're a great cook and you love to cook, to find new recipes and new ingredients. If you don't cook, this would be a great gift for a kid just out of college who needs to learn how to cook but maybe doesn't and is spending a lot of time at the ramen shop or eating cup of noodles. Get them a Blue Apron subscription. They're going to get everything they need, and it's easy. They walk you every step of the way through the recipe, and they're going to be great cooks. And I tell you what, date night, you use a Blue Apron, you cook up something amazing. That is the best way to your date's heart. Blue Apron is fantastic. If you've been eating burgers a lot, if you've been making spaghetti a lot, this is so much better. You're making things like short ribs with a hoppy cheddar sauce on a pretzel bun. Oh, I hate this part of the ad because I get so hungry. You're making seared steaks and thyme pan sauce with mashed potatoes, green beans, and crispy shallots. What do we have here? Oh, I love there's Shanghai Kung Pao chicken. Always wanted to know how to make that. Actually, Michael, our 15-year-old, loves Kung Pao chicken, but we always just get the frozen stuff. This way, he can learn how to make it from scratch. And look what you get. You get fabulous meats. You get all the chicken, every ingredient, the pea pods, the shallots, the peppers, and you don't get 100 peppers. You get the one pepper you need. So there's no waste. One clove of garlic. And of course, all the sauces, but not a big bottle that's going to sit in the fridge for the next 3 years, but just exactly the right amount of hoisin sauce and soy sauce, and all the things you need. And you're going to make a meal that's better than any restaurant. Blue Apron changes every week based on what's in season. Now through May 21st, they're teaming up with Airbnb to bring you the best home cooking from around the world each week. I love this. This is why I love Blue Apron. They do stuff like this all the time. Each week through the end of May 21st, the menu is going to feature recipe developed in collaboration with an Airbnb experiences host. So you're going to get some amazing food from around the world. How about chicken tinga tostadas with avocado and refried beans? That's from Mexico City. From Firenze, Florence, Italy. Roast pork and salsa verde with sautéed vegetables. From Buenos Aires, beef empanadas with roasted sweet potatoes and creamy zucchini. Why do they do this to me? From Tokyo, beef and rice bowl with soft-boiled eggs and broccoli. I'm telling you, I love my Blue Apron. The other day we did a roast chicken. And with ingredients I've never, like farro. You've probably used farro. I never tried it. I'm going to get farro from now
on. It's good.
That's the other thing is you learn about new ingredients, fairy eggplants. You ever have a fairy eggplant?
No.
They're really good. Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free and free shipping. BlueApron.com/twit. That's BlueApron.com/twit. First three meals free and free shipping. You got to try this. It's too late for Mother's Day, but hey, Father's Day is just around the corner.
It's true.
Cook for Dad. All right. Let me play you. This is Duplex calling a Chinese restaurant.
See, how may I hear you?
Okay. First of all, when Sundar Pichai did this on stage, they put subtitles up. Because, no, you wouldn't be able... That's the human. It's hard to understand. The computer apparently didn't have any trouble.
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
For 7 people?
Okay. So the human's misunderstood already. He said, I want a dinner for May 7th. She said for 7 people. Now, normally, I think most artificial intelligences would get lost here. If it were Eliza, go home. Go home. But he doesn't.
It's for 4 people.
Knew the difference.
Yep.
4 people when?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually, we live here for like 5 people. For 4 people, you can come.
Okay, so now let me translate. The AI had no trouble with that, but what she was saying was, we only need reservations for upward of 5 people. For 4 people, you just come. Google, the assistant didn't have any trouble.
How long is the wait usually to...
In fact, made an amazing logical leap. Not only did it didn't, in a second, it said, oh, well, then I need to know how long I'd have to wait.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have got that one.
Be seated.
When, tomorrow or weekday or...
For next Wednesday, the 7th.
Okay, that was a little robotic.
Yeah. It was, it quickly jumped to
Right. And if it were Harry sitting with a curtain, you would have known that that was a computer. So maybe it doesn't pass the Turing test.
Or if I knew from the get-go it might be a computer, it would be able to figure out it was a computer.
If you knew if you knew to expect it.
Right.
I
think the classic Turing test, you're aware that there might be a computer on the other side, right?
Right. So maybe it doesn't pass the Turing test, but it's...
It's not too easy. You can count for four people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye. But, in a situation like this where the person on the other end of the line, probably has no idea that it's a computer calling them.
It was close enough.
Just a really clueless person.
Yeah, just an average person. Yeah. You pick up the phone, you answer the phone, and if you're not expecting a robot, to be speaking that way, you probably wouldn't even think about it. I mean, it's close enough that there's nothing really obvious there that would jump out at you, especially in a case like this. If you, depending on what the accent was and what your accent is, what you're used to listening to, if it's something that's in a way that might be a little unfamiliar to you, I think that would make it even easier to not recognize it, or more likely that you would not recognize it as an AI.
They've come up with some, I think, very human-like tricks. Here's how Duplex handles an eruption.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, what's your phone number?
The phone number is 607.
Wait, can you start over?
The number is
607. That's a robot. Artificial.
That's robotic. Uh-huh. However, it handled the interruption. Yeah. Right, it knew that it got interrupted and it should start over.
You know what I actually find the most interesting part of this is not so much having a robot that can do these tasks for me, but the fact that this robot is able to recognize natural language speech so well. Because again, going back to the car thing, one of the issues with distraction in cars, they've tried to give us voice recognition systems, and even at home, with the voice assistants at home, the vocabulary that these devices are have to use, it tends to be very limited.
Super limited.
And doing having more natural language voice interactions with a machine would make it much easier, much more likely that you would actually use them.
And that's the point, right?
Yeah.
To get us to use them 100% of the time, anytime we can.
Imagine here, I could think of some non-military scenarios.
I know, I really took it there. But that's where my brain went during the keynote a little bit.
But what if you're in Tokyo, happened to me recently, and mm-hmm. you want a restaurant, you want to make a reservation, you don't speak Japanese.
Yes, I heard this example,
Google Assistant could call in Japanese, make a reservation for me.
Exactly, it'd be really helpful. Although you could do that now with Google Translate.
Yeah, but you'd have to kind of say, okay, listen.
I mean,
this is adding a lot more automation, and taking friction out of that process.
It's pretty impressive.
Well, and the other thing, on the flight today, I was listening to Android Central podcast, and they were talking about some of this stuff. And one of the interesting scenarios they came up with is, for us to use it, in a lot of situations, it would just be us being lazy. But there are also a lot of scenarios where people, there's a real value to something like this. If you have a speech impediment for accessibility of any sort, whether you're unable to speak or anxious or whatever it might be, if you could sit there and type in these commands and have it communicate like this, for you, that would be a huge boon to people.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear Google's recordings that did not go so well.
I would too.
I know.
Can you imagine it could be a huge, pardon my French, Sam, car wreck. If somebody train wreck. Thank
Maybe
you.
Too much cursing for them to play it back at
Google. Go away.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. Yeah, obviously, you know, for these sorts of things, you can be very selective about which examples you choose to play.
And as people pointed out, Google was not so confident in the technology that they did a live demo.
No. Yeah. And remember, they did do a live demo last year of Google's Pixel Buds doing simultaneous translation in Swedish. Looked great on the stage. As soon as we got it in the studio, it didn't work at all. It was terrible. So demos can really fool you.
Uh-huh.
And Google's no stranger to...
Yours just heard you.
What?
Your phone just heard you.
Go away! I'm not talking! Go away!
Speaking of the Google Assistant.
Yeah. So anyway, nevertheless. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Impressive and just, I'm surprised at where I am at in my life, where tech is at right now in my life. I didn't think that this would be here.
What I wonder. Are we at an inflection point? You've been watching this for a long time.
We've been in an inflection point with AI for maybe the last 2 years in terms of stuff.
Because AI, and we're both old enough to remember this, went through an AI winter.
Right.
People had great hopes for AI.
People were excited in the 80s. They were excited in the 60s. In the 60s, there was this big AI conference, or was it the 70s? Where people thought stuff was about 18 months off, which we're only accomplishing
Ray
now.
Kurzweil has been saying the singularity is 10 years off for the last 40 years, right? So,
and he's been wrong so far, except now I'm not so sure whether he's wrong.
His current date is 2029.
Right. It's coming up.
Some of this stuff seems way more plausible than it would have just maybe 2 to 3 years ago.
But that's to me what made Duplex kind of interesting. And Waymo and a lot of the things that we're starting to see. Lennar Homes, which is one of the big builders, one of the biggest builders in the United States, has announced that from now on, every new home it builds will have Amazon Echo built in.
That's like hardwiring in Ethernet. You know, you've talked about this on the radio show many times. You know, when people call you up.
For years, I told people to get Ethernet in the walls, and then Wi-Fi came along.
Just put conduit in. So you can run whatever you want in there.
Fiber. Yeah.
I think building in Alexa or anything else like that would probably be a terrible idea.
Well, they're going to do it. They're the biggest home builder in America.
Building in mics, all around the house and speakers.
Ah.
Now, if you just put the basic hardware in there, and have something where you can plug in a processing system and be able to use whatever voice assistant you want to, or whatever is current, you can
change
it over.
But then it becomes a vehicle to just sell you things, and then you're
which
like
is
living,
what it is today.
Well, and
it's
I think
true. That's true.
There are a lot of people, a large number, maybe even half, who would say, "I'm not going to buy a house that has microphones in it." I don't trust that.
That's actually a good point. I mean, I have two Echo Dots that I've been gifted over the last year and a half that are both sitting in a drawer.
You don't use them.
We don't use them because we have no use for them. My wife and I, it's just my wife and the dog and I now. The kids are gone. And, if we want to turn off the lights, we get up and turn off the lights.
Yeah.
At some
you're
point.
You're starting to sound like an old man. Well, if I want to turn on the lights, I'm going to get up and turn them on. It was good enough for me.
I mean, at some point, it may get to a stage where, one or both of us is physically unable to do that. And at that point, we might consider them.
But for
now, we have no need for that kind of stuff.
It's
actually
pretty cool.
You're in a trough. It's normal. I've been through it. I had got Hue lights everywhere in my old place. And then when we moved, I had Nest, I had Hue, I had everything. Didn't install anything. Now we got cameras. I put the Hue lights back in. I have a sensor. When I walk into my office, the lights come on. The only thing that drives me crazy, my wife keeps coming in and turning off the lights.
And then you can't use them anymore.
Honey, they'll turn themselves off. Honest, just be patient. When she turns it off, I come in the room. It's still dark. And I go,
I had to teach my husband that, too.
Lisa must be the most patient woman in the world.
No, you know who the most patient person in the world is? Stacey Higginbotham's husband, Andrew.
That's true.
Stacey talks about, she says, we have a pair of blinds that are supposed to go up automatically that haven't worked in 2 years.
Oh, no.
and it's kind of a running joke now. He's, are the blinds working yet? Apparently, she got them working, I'm told.
IoT.
I feel sorry for your husband.
IoT.
Now you're doing all
don't get into IoT.
Stuff,
I'm warning you.
But I'm talking to you. Oh, they're trying to sell you things. But who am I to say? I have a Google Assistant in every room in my house. So
I use Google Assistant all the time. But I also my phone is on me all the time, and that's how I use it. I don't need another device that's listening.
Well, I
want to
put my phone down. That's why I put them. And that was the whole crux of the keynote, the Google I/O keynote, was to put your phone down and to use the Google Assistant in this other manifestation.
The ambient computing, you know.
Exactly.
When Walt Mossberg retired last year, his last column was on that, you know.
Yeah. He's
ambient computing.
And I think some of these trends are obvious. It's just a matter of when's this going to happen. But it's very clear a few things are happening. One is, computing's everywhere. It's gotten cheap enough that you can put it in everything. There's computers moving out to the edge. It's everywhere. That's IoT, but it's in your cars.
And,
it's everywhere.
A couple of years ago at all the developer conferences, I think it was maybe two years ago or 3 years ago, all the developer conferences, everybody was talking about bots. And it was all the bots and the messaging.
And that arrived dead on arrival.
It was DOA in the way they were talking about it. But there are, I think, in the long run, they're actually right.
Well, isn't that what Assistant is? Isn't that what Amazon's Echo is?
Yes, and Duplex and things like this.
Yeah.
And, I wrote a column
at
the
time. You just don't want a messenger bot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A messenger bot is pointless. But I think that in the long run, as we start to get into autonomous mobility services as an example. Mm-hmm.
What's autonomous mobility services?
Autonomous vehicle ride hailing services. So instead of, you pulling out your phone and opening up Lyft or Uber or Didi if you're in China or, whichever service, you're going to have accounts on all these services. Your phone has your calendar on it. It knows where you are, knows where you need to be an hour from now. And what will happen is there will just be these bots that are working in the background. Your assistant bot will look at your calendar and say, okay, you have an appointment across town in an hour. I'm going to go and talk to the traffic bot, find out what the traffic and find out what the weather is, see which services you're subscribed to. That's your ombudsman, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
And all that stuff is going to be complete. The bots will take the friction out of it and make it completely seamless. So you don't. It takes away the interface to all of these different services.
And that's what you need.
So
you
it'll
move
just happen
out
around
to the edge.
Yeah.
You need to somehow solve the interface issue. I mean, look at how much Apple struggled with the Apple Watch. You've got this clever device, but the UI is unusable because you've got all these buttons and knobs. And so you've got to solve that. Voice is a really good way to solve
that. And in a lot of cases, for a lot of the stuff, you don't even need an interface. It'll happen.
You'll
step out the door.
It just knows what you
want. And the car will be sitting there waiting for you. You get in, it takes you, drops you off at your destination. It goes off and picks up somebody else that their bot
has requested. You know what's funny is how people react to this is, that's creepy. Right? I mean, it is what we kind of want, but they also, I think they react that way to Google. That's creepy. That Google Duplex, that's creepy.
Well, I mean, that is the downside of all this is that, and even just with autonomous cars, today you can get in your car and drive off somewhere and nobody knows where you are. Or at least I can in my car because it's completely disconnected. But in your car, Elon always knows where you are.
Yeah.
But, in the future, if we're using autonomous cars, they will always be connected. They have to be in order to be able to summon them, in order to dispatch them and everything. And there will be monitors inside the car so the car knows. And the service, whatever service runs that car, will know who's in that vehicle, what they're doing. So you will, this is one of the potential downsides of all of this stuff. If we go down this path, whatever little bit of privacy we might still have will completely evaporate.
Well, that brings us to GDPR, and I want to talk about that. And Robert Bigelow in our chat room says, it's all just going to be a vehicle for advertising. I can hear it now. Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? Store-bought sandwich bread? You could have at least bought Pepperidge Farm.
I don't know. They made bread. Oh, yeah, they do.
Pepperidge Farm.
Why do you think these guys are developing autonomous
cars? That's a Waymo, a water bottle.
That was part of the I/O keynote, too. Even though Waymo is not really part of Google, they were on stage talking about autonomous ride-hailing.
Spent a lot of time talking about it, yeah.
Well, they're leveraging a lot of the technology that Google's been developing, the AI stuff.
I'm
convinced that, like, the photo, the Google Photos stuff, all the data they're gathering from photos, it's just like back 10 years ago when they did Google Voice or the Google 411, and they were training their voice models using that. And I'm sure that part of the reason why they did Google Photos is to train these image recognition neural networks.
Yep.
And, Google's
really thinking long term.
That's why they know the cats between the dogs and they know the different dogs between the different cats.
And they can recolor your photos now, which maybe was my single favorite demo.
Someday they might even be able to take chain link fences out of the photo.
Now, I don't think
it's still waiting for that.
I don't think the primary reason for self-driving cars is this, but numbers of executives have mentioned it will also be good for Google because you got to do something while you're not driving the car, and that could be surfing the net and seeing Google ads.
It's that's a primary reason why Google was involved in this.
Yeah. Didn't we see, I can't remember who it was, they were testing on humans, you know, focus group testing, what kind of in-car screens and entertainment you might like. And, of course, that's all about showing you more ads. I mean, ultimately, isn't this going to be more ads?
Well, understanding the user experience in these vehicles, because I mean there's still a lot of things to work out as far as user experience goes, both inside and outside of the vehicles.
Actually, something's going to happen in May 25th that may change all of this. Doc Searles, who is the author of the Clue Train Manifesto, I think he's a really smart guy, has just wrote a blog post saying that GDPR is going to kill ad tech, and that it came about probably because of ad tech. But we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Great panel. Harry McCracken, the Technologizers here from Fast Company, from All About Android, Florence Ion. Thank you for coming in on Tuesday.
Thank you for having me.
But on Tuesday, too, we did the keynote, and that was great. We have that on our Twitter specials if you want to see the whole Google keynote. And the day before, Father Robert Ballaser did the Build keynote. You weren't here for that. Who did he do it with? Anyway. So we have both of those Twit specials. So if you want to see the keynotes, you could, of course, go watch them on Microsoft and Google site. But wouldn't you prefer to have us with you as you watch them together? Also, Sam Abuel El-Samid, who is a senior analyst at Navigant Research. And obviously, were you a tech journalist in earlier life?
I was an automotive journalist for several years.
That I knew.
Full-time. I spent 17 years as an automotive engineer, product development.
Because you're up on all the stories.
Yeah, and then I was a journalist for several years and then spent a few years on the dark side doing PR for a couple of car companies. And then 4 years now as an analyst where I get to combine all of the stuff that I learned in all my previous lives in one place.
It's great to have you. Oh, wait a minute. We got to show this. There's a Funny or Die video about Google Duplex. Maybe we show that, and then we'll go to an ad break. Actually, why don't we do this first? I'm going to get that video going. And then before we do, though, we have a nice little video that we made here without any art, with human intelligence, a little bit of what you might have missed if you missed anything this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Yesterday, May 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Was the 20th anniversary of the launch of ZDTV.
Crazy.
That's why I'm still wearing my pocket protector.
Well, I got to give you your third anniversary, Kesh.
Well, what's that?
I don't know if it's going to fit, but I went down to the docks.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. Oh, Lord.
All About Android.
We are at Google I.O. 2018. We're having a great time so far. So we're sitting down with the people who are pulling the strings on how Android is developed behind the scenes.
How does the decision occur as to which candy?
Oh, right.
Yes.
We can't do this interview and not ask.
I have no idea.
iOS today.
Does your mom have an iPhone 10?
She does not. And that's actually probably what I'm going to end up getting her is a new iPhone. And you know what would be really great?
This phone call blew my mind.
I think that would make her happy.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Mother's Day.
Just casually spending $1,000.
Following characters are not permitted.
You're spending $1,000 and they won't let you use an apostrophe?
That's what I'm talking about.
Twit. It's like tech TV without the overpriced cable bill.
Yes. It
I think if you got to spend that kind of money, you should put it up for whatever characters you want.
Oh, that's Kevin? That was Pat. Like Patrick Norton.
No, that was Kevin.
Martin Sargent stopped by yesterday. That was a lot of fun. Third anniversary of the new screensavers, the 20th anniversary of the original screensavers. Kind of hard to
believe.
Happy
anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Funny or Die had a nice take. Oh, I gave it away. I gave away the... This is, just watch a review of the Google Duplex here. Oh, I muted the sound, as always. Something.
This phone call blew my mind. I want you to listen to it very, very carefully. It sounds like an ordinary call at first, but trust me, the twist at the end is worth it.
Wait a minute, is this CNET? Why am I watching CNET?
Good evening.
Did I get the wrong
Hello?
One?
Hello?
I did, I got the wrong
Hi.
One. Oh, it is funny or not.
Let's listen.
Wait a minute. Here we go.
Hello?
Hi, I'm calling on behalf of your daughter, Lindsay, to say hello.
Oh, that's so nice. Hang on, let me get her father on the phone, too. Harold! Lindsay's Google assistant is calling.
Hello?
Hi, Harold. I was just telling Denise that Lindsay wanted to say hello.
Oh, that's great. How is she?
She's doing very well. She recently ordered 2 cookbooks and spent 60% of her average on food delivery service last month.
Oh, see, Harold? I told you she'd start cooking if we just keep telling her how easy it can be.
A sentiment analysis of her recent messages and social posts shows she's grateful for your guidance.
Hey, is she still seeing that Sam? Is it Sam or Stan?
I think it's Dan.
Sam is her boss. Stan is her therapist. Dan is your coworker, Denise.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's still dating Corey.
Corey!
She travels to his home most nights and weekends, and they frequently text while apart.
Is there a picture of this Corey character we can see?
There are many photos, but none of his face, unfortunately.
I'll see it.
Oh, Lindsay has been watching Westworld with your HBO Go password. Have you seen it?
Is that the one with the robots?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't like any of that sci-fi stuff. It's so crazy. It's like, how could any of this possibly happen, you know?
LOL. I know. So true.
Oh, you know who I ran into the other day? Lindsay's high school friend's mom. The one with the funny haircut and the weird raspy voice. What was her name again? Does she still talk to her?
Jennifer Larkin. They're Facebook friends. Jennifer is a paralegal now. It seems kind of like she recently broke up with her boyfriend, but is happier now.
Oh, that's nice.
Lindsay could use some extra cash to go to a concert this weekend with her friends.
Hey, when's the last time Lindsay's been to the dentist?
2014.
Yeah, no dice on the cash.
Okay, it was great catching up with you. Here's a recording from Lindsay.
Hi, Mom and Dad. I love you. Thank you so much for the money. Okay, bye now.
Nice try, Lindsay. Okay, bye now.
Bye, Lindsay. Love you.
And they loved it at Google I.O. Oh, that's hysterical. Funny Your Dad gets credit. And it's, you know what? I think it would be nice if I could have the Google assistant call my
mom. Yeah, it would.
Yeah. I think that might not be a bad thing, would it?
Take on the labor, emotional labor work.
And she knows so much. And she's so nice.
Yes.
You can ask her almost anything.
She'll tell you anything.
Yeah. It's not dystopian at all.
No.
Wait till the military.
She's just a really good friend.
Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Oh, I love LegalZoom. When we started Twit, gosh, it's been a long time ago. Almost, 2005, 13 years ago, I asked Kevin Rose. I said, what should you do when you start a business? He started many. He said, you should call LegalZoom and get an LLC. I did. Trademarked it, the Twit name and the logo and all that stuff. Look, attorneys are expensive. It says in their ad copy, $300 an hour. Obviously, LegalZoom is not in the Bay Area. It's a lot. Let's just put it that way. That's why. Yeah, $300 an hour. Are you kidding? That's their paralegal. 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom just like I did to start their businesses with LLCs and corporations. I couldn't afford a $500 an hour white shoe lawyer to do it, but I could do LegalZoom. And then even after your business is set up, LegalZoom's there to help you out with things like lease agreements, changing tax laws. Even contract reviews. That is the worst thing we have to do is look at contracts and find all the things we want to change. But that's exactly what LegalZoom is there for you. They created their business legal plan. With it, you can get legal advice, not just the forms you need, but actual advice from vetted independent attorneys and tax professionals in every state. You also receive access to NDAs and more. Best part is you won't get charged by the hour. LegalZoom is not a law firm. Instead, you pay one low upfront price. I think this is the way to go if you're starting a business or a family or if you need legal help or advice of any kind. Check out LegalZoom's business legal plan. It's at LegalZoom.com. You'll get a special savings when you enter the promo code TWIT in the referral box at checkout. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. LegalZoom.com. Don't forget the promo code is TWIT for $10 off. I loved all this Google stuff, I have to say. It's a lot of fun. Now, after this, Ev Leaks,
mm-hmm.
Leaks out Pixel 3 phone and a new Pixel Wear watch. There's not been anything. They didn't even mention the Wear OS
at
the Google I.O., although they all were wearing giant, big, round Google Wear watches or Android Wear watches.
They were.
The guy next to me on the plane this morning was wearing a some sort of
fossil, probably. Maybe.
No, actually, I think it might have actually been a Samsung Gear.
I have a Gear one, and I like it a lot. I have the Gear S3 Forester, Frontier, something like that.
Is that the green one, the camouflage?
No, it sounds like it should be, but it's not. I really like it, but part of the problem with this is that Qualcomm hasn't updated the chip that the original Android Wear came from. They announced right at the same time as Google I/O that they're going to do that. They have a new chip coming sometime later this year, better battery life, faster, more powerful, and that coincides with roughly around the time frame Google will announce a new Pixel, right, October.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see a new Android Wear watch. There's the Ev Blass tweet from Ev Leaks.
There was a little thing going around, too, about a watch from Google, a health-centric watch that can take measurements of your blood.
Oh. No.
Blood pressure or, like, blood samples?
Like,
no.
Well,
no.
I mean, read the headline.
So here's the problem.
Blood samples.
Everybody wants to do this. You know, how many diabetics are there in America? It's a huge number.
Yeah.
Millions. Especially type 2 diabetics, because, that's what happens when you eat a lot of sugar. There is a massive market for non-invasive blood glucose monitoring. Nobody's got it. In fact, I have a friend who's a daughter that just discovered she's a seven-year-old, just has type 1 diabetes. And she's talking about, oh, my God, they have a constant glucose monitoring, but it's a pain. They have to replace the sensor. She says it's supposed to be a week. It seems like it's every 3 days. Blood pricks for a kid. It's painful to put the sensor in. It just goes on and on and on, and she's got to do injections. This would be a huge market. So Apple, in fact, remember Tim Cook saying, I've been wearing this glucose monitor for some time? But it turns out in every case it's intrusive. You have to stick something in. So you have the story?
It was on CNBC. So if you want to go see it, it's real.
Okay, that's incredible.
So Google's sister company, Verily, is working on a device.
That's their health sciences company,
yep,
right?
Yep, their health sciences company, working on a device that collects blood using tiny exploding needles.
Oh, great. Oh, that's better than a prick.
What could possibly go wrong?
Tiny exploding needles?
The idea is to make it less invasive and annoying to collect blood, especially for those who need to be frequently monitored. But the project is still years away from hitting the market, so... But, we're hearing a lot about
this. Here's an article from April 2017, mm-hmm. November 2017.
This patent was filed in 2015, apparently.
This is by my former colleague, Christina Farr, who knows what she's talking about.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to this stuff.
Yep, I follow her on Twitter specifically for that news.
When was the news about the Google contact lenses, the diabetes?
That was years ago.
Yeah,
that was also
2014.
From
2014?
2014,
That was the contact lens would be able to see your blood sugar because your tears, it turns out, can also tell you what your blood sugar is. But that's what I told my friend because she was saying, this is a lot of work. This is really hard. I feel bad for my kid. I feel bad for me. I said, the good news is it's a good time to get diabetes, especially as a type 1 diabetes.
Relatively speaking.
If you're going to get it. Because I think technology is really changing. And I think things like those contact lenses, I even told her, I said specifically, I think things like those contact lenses, within the next 5 to 10 years, right? Kid's 7. But before the kid's an adult, there'll be plenty of good solutions out there.
Yep.
Including, there's glucose, insulin pumps, which she wears. If you get monitoring, constant monitoring plus an insulin pump, it makes life a lot easier all around. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. And that's important. And I said all that. There's a lot of money in it. And that's why Google and anybody else are very interested. All right, Facebook. We haven't talked about Facebook in so long. Cambridge Analytica, the company that bought and got all that data from Facebook and then used it to sell it to campaigns and lots of people, is out of business, right? No. No.
Rebranding.
Yeah, they rebranded. So there was a story. We did it. The Cambridge Analytica declared bankruptcy and retired. The registers got the story. They just changed their name, that's all, to Emmer Data. So even though they were shut down and liquidated, the people and I presume the data have moved on to a new company.
Just change your name.
The services are probably still out there.
You're harder to Google.
Oh, you want to get angry? Well, you want to get really angry? Let's talk about Equifax.
Ooh.
My favorite evil company. Equifax, again from the register. Equifax reveals the full horror of its cyber heist. $146 million. That number seems to keep going up. Oh, no, I guess no, that's the same number. But
they just have more stuff. Information.
It turns out 99 million addresses, 209,000 credit cards, 38,000 driver's licenses, and oh, get this, 3,200 passports.
Passports.
And has Equifax been punished in any way for this breach? No, in fact, they're making money off of it.
A moment of madness.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way that people got into the Equifax servers, the bad guys got in, they were using Apache, the web server, and were using Apache Struts, which is a plugin for Apache, and it had a known flaw. Equifax wasn't paying attention, and even though the flaw had been discovered months before, it was taken advantage of. At RSA, Derek Weeks said that thousands of companies continue to download the old version of Apache's Struts. So I'm sure more breaches are coming. Jeez.
Well, I mean, at this point, you just have to assume that everything about you is out there somewhere. I mean,
your passport's a big deal, though.
I was not aware Equifax could even have my passport.
Yeah. Apparently, for some people, it was 3,200, probably not yours. But still.
You never
know.
Local news these days is all about data breaches.
Have you,
Just FYI.
And just imagine what it's going to be like when we have all the autonomous connected cars out there.
It's a very popular story right now.
And the anchors can shake their heads and say, they're at it again.
They're at it again.
What is so you watch local? See, I never watch local.
Sometimes I wake up really early on a Saturday and I have YouTube TV.
So what do they say? What do they say? Like, do they say?
They just report on it.
They just say it's happening?
Yeah, your data has been breached.
Do they say anything you should do or do they say?
Not usually.
Yeah.
They just say your information's out there. It's been taken. I forgot who they were talking about yesterday.
Chili's was hacked.
Chili's was hacked?
Chili's. Credit card and debit card.
My beloved Chili's?
You ever go to Panera? You ever go order online?
I worked at Panera.
Bread? They were hacked. Anybody else you want to know?
I only use Google Pay at Panera, though.
That's why you should use Apple Pay.
Any place where I can, I use my phone
to
pay.
That's almost the primary reason to use one of those services.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Tokenization.
I agree. Have you been looking at the Russia-linked Facebook ads? Facebook has added a new feature where you can see who is behind Facebook groups. Turns out about half of all the Trump groups on Facebook, for instance, are from people not in the United States.
I'm shocked.
Shocked. So Facebook released 3,500. Actually, the House Intelligence Committee.
Facebook has not released all of them.
Yeah. The House Intelligence Committee released 3,500 Facebook and Instagram ads from the Internet Research Agency. That was the Russian trolling group.
Internet Research Agency.
And let me see if I can find some of them.
IRA.
The time has come. The United Muslims of America.
Like that.
Right? Now, remember, this is Russians. The time has come to understand one simple thing. We, the American Muslims, are as American. And then, I'm sure there's apple pie after that. And then, in pseudo-Arabic script, support Hillary. Save American Muslims. Who do you think that was aimed at?
I can't imagine.
Holy cow. And by the way, notice it says it came from the Obama White House, Washington, D.C. Wow.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Oh.
Many, many Black Lives Matter websites. Oh, here's a nice one. Stop AI is the group. We are under attack. Even though there is no open action, the war has already started. The enemy is smart and ruthless. We're losing so far because our leader is one of them. And it has Obama with in Muslim garb in front of Arabic flags with Arabic lettering. Stop all invaders. There is a traitor in our midst. And a picture, by the way, behind him of his arm around.
Oh, my God.
Actually, one of President Trump's favorite people, the Prince of Saudi Arabia. Black Matters. Not lives, just Black Matters. We don't want to honor racism, slavery, and hatred. This is what Confederate Heritage is. Not My Heritage Rally. These are all fake. But you can see how they might have convinced somebody, maybe some soft-minded person. Take your hands off General Robert E. Lee. Southern Rebel Pride. Direct from Moscow.
So prideful.
It's really eye-opening to read these.
We're just doomed.
So Facebook didn't release these. They gave them the House Intelligence Committee, and then the Democrats in the House Intelligence Committee said, you know, you really ought to see these.
And you guys wonder why I was freaked out by Google Duplex.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff is being spoofed. Yeah.
Well, it was a while ago, actually. Didn't Adobe show how you could write a script and have President Obama's voice say it?
Yes. Yeah. Jordan Peele voiced it.
He did a great video of that.
Because he sounds just like Obama.
That didn't scare me that much because it was...
You need to know Jordan
Peele.
Because
the uncanny valley, it was so huge on that I wouldn't be fooled.
Yeah.
True. You played him on SNL or whatever.
But how long before that gets good enough to
I'm not sure. Well, Duplex was more scary because it was so much closer to perfection than that. Right.
That's the one where I actually closed my eyes for a second while I was listening to the demo just to like different. And I had a hard time that last sample you showed. Anyway, not to go back there, but still thinking about it all these days later.
There is some good news. The worst robocaller of all. His name is Adrian Abramovich. He's a Florida man accused of making nearly 100 million spoofed robocalls in just 3 months.
Wow.
Do the math. 100 million in 3 months.
It was a bot,
He says his intentions were only the best. He was doing one posing as a lot of the travel companies. I think he was
posing. That cruise thing you got? That's probably.
He was posing as Marriott.
Where's my free cruise?
Yeah. Marriott. I got that one all the time. That was him?
I got that incessantly for a while.
So what's the deal? It's not Marriott?
No.
So how does he make money on this?
I assume he's trying to sell you terrible travel experiences, and you only listen because you think he's Marriott.
Because you think it's Marriott.
And you know, whatever Expedia. Number or whatever phone number they give you to call or link that they give you, you know, obviously is going somewhere else.
A year ago, I heard from it several times a day.
Well,
now they're all in Chinese.
For people who think, there's no good government regulation, this is a good one. The FCC finalized... It's fine. Abramovich said, I'm not the kingpin of robocalling.
Then who is? Lead us to them.
Yeah, I'd like to know who that is.
I want to know.
FCC hit him with a $120 million
fine. Never paying
fine.
That off.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to get that? It's the second largest fine in history.
Huh.
In fact, the previous record was $95 million related to a robocalling operation from last August that made only about 20 million robocalls.
How do you get into that? Like, who comes up to you on the street and goes, hey, you want to be a scammy robocaller? Come on over here, buddy, and let me show you how it's done. Yeah.
So there's some good news. And by the way, this is one of those... robocallers that uses caller ID spoofing, in particular the most notoriously awful one, neighbor spoofing, where it comes from your area code and sometimes even your exchange.
First three numbers.
A lot of the ones I get are from my exchange.
Yeah, I don't answer those calls anymore. But a lot of people would say, well, I have to. That could be my school. That could be my kid. That could.
You know
I
what? Mean, if it's real and it's important, they'll leave a voicemail.
Yeah.
And then if I get the voicemail, then I'll call them back.
Also,
Now I get are ones that are almost but not quite from my exchange.
Because
I think people figured out if it is your exchange, it's spam.
Well, you know what's good, though, is Google is actually figuring out a lot of them and catching a lot of them before they get through.
And you can block them.
Yeah.
A lot of the calls
now pop up on the Google dialer. It pops up, shows scam up on the red screen and says suspected spam call.
All the cell carriers are doing this.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't just block them outright. Maybe because they can't be sure it's a scam call.
I've had a couple times where it said it was a bad number, and it's like, no, just send just a voicemail. Just the nail salon.
Yeah. So you wanted your nail salon. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and now, it'll, after it sees a number for the first time, if I didn't pick it up, it'll ask me if I want to add it to contact or block it.
They never reuse that number.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, but if it is a case where it's a legit number, I can add it. I can, one tap and I can add it to contacts.
Right.
And then subsequently it'll just come through.
Yeah.
Now 100% of my spam
calls
are in Mandarin, and apparently they're telling me I have to call the embassy and pay them something or I'll be in trouble.
The embassy.
and apparently...
So they think you're Chinese.
You owe the Chinese tax authorities.
They think you're an illegal Chinese immigrant.
And
have you been to China?
And I thought it was just me, but it's lots of people, apparently.
Wow.
That is wild.
You're not getting these?
No, I haven't got them yet. I use a Google Voice number that's headquartered in Baltimore. because it's a vanity number and only the 302 area code had it. So anytime I see a call from Baltimore, I just say, no, I know that's
I'm getting
me.
Spam calls on my Google Voice number now. It's oh, yeah. upsetting because I have a 415 number, which is San Francisco.
Well, that's why you should have a Baltimore number. Then you'll know. Another good reason to have a Baltimore
it's
number.
It's my only 415 number. My regular number is a 510.
See? Yeah. That's a good reason they have a Google yeah. Voice number. Oh, here's a happy. Okay, so I gave you a little happy.
Yay, happy.
Now I'll give you a little sad.
Oh, boo.
New York Times article about a company appropriately called Securus. Their big business is providing phones for prisoners. They offer a service, this is according to the New York Times, that let law enforcement monitor inmates' calls. That's legal because you're an inmate. You don't have the right to privacy, I gather. But they also, as a kind of a sideline, they also offer location tracking services. They have a location finding service that's available to any law enforcement or corrections official that can pinpoint where nearly every cell phone in the country is at any given time, within seconds. Here's the irony. It does this by going through a system used by marketers and other companies to get location data from major cell phone carriers. AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, they all cooperate. And it came to light because of this guy. He's a former Missouri sheriff. He lost his job recently on another matter. But he's been charged with using the Securus service to track judges, members of the State Highway Patrol, not perps. But I guess now that we know, this could be used by anybody in law enforcement. A Securus spokesman said, Securus is neither a judge nor a district attorney, and the responsibility of ensuring the legal adequacy of supporting documentation lies with our customers and their counsel. In other words, we don't vet. If you ask for the location, we'll give it to you. So you're carrying, you know, remember the movies, you know, you'd have the cop, or this private eye creep under the car bumper and stick the magnetic tracker on. You don't need to do that anymore.
We all carry our own trackers.
We all have our own trackers.
We consented to our own trackers a long time ago.
You don't need to get under my car. Ironically, wasn't it the Supreme Court that said that law enforcement couldn't do the magnetic tracker? So yeah. they don't need a warrant. It's a pen register. It's legal.
It sounds, though, like at least T-Mobile said that they will shut this down.
Good.
And maybe the other carriers as well.
Good.
I'm sure Verizon won't.
Because basically this company is violating the spirit of how that technology is used, as far as I can tell.
It's the spirit.
Yes. You're
supposed to be using it to sell stuff to people.
Right. Yeah, come on.
And consumers are supposed to opt into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do you opt in?
They send you like a text message saying, if you want us to continue doing this, respond with a
Have you ever seen that message? It's probably in Chinese.
Well, it's probably worded in such a way that it entices you to click in the affirmative to opt in.
Right.
You know, even though what you think you're doing is opting out.
Right.
But Securus isn't even doing that.
I want to tell you, we're going to take a break, and then I have one more story, something you're going to want to buy for the holidays, for everybody in your family. But first, something you might want to get right now, Texture. This company is so great, Apple bought them. Texture is kind of Netflix for magazines, $10 a month, more than 200 of the top magazines in the world, including Time, The Atlantic, PC Magazine, The New Yorker. I have to say, there is great journalism being done. We were talking before the show about subscribing to newspapers to support them and so forth. There is great journalism being done, long-form journalism in magazines in this country. Great stuff. I read. And the problem is, if you were to subscribe to all these magazines, it would cost you thousands of dollars, and your coffee table would buckle under the weight of all of this paper. Well, now, and it's, boy, is it, I can know why Apple bought them. It is the best thing on your iPad. It makes the iPad a perfect travel companion. All you do is you favorite the magazines you want. They're automatically downloaded every month. You get every page in the newsstand issue. You get every back issue. Plus, you get bonus features you can't get in print, like video. Texture's when we went to Japan, Lisa and I both do this. We loaded up our iPads with great reading from Texture. By the way, if you love photography, they have a bunch of photography stuff like National Geographic and Shutterbug. And pictures are so much better on the iPad than they are in print. They don't have to screen them. There's no dots. They just look great. Unlimited access to over 200 top magazines, back issues, all in one app. This is the next stage in the evolution of magazines. You can sign up right now for a free 7-day trial. You've got to try it. Texture.com/twit. iOS, Android, works on the... By the way, it is the single best reason to buy a Fire tablet. If you don't have a tablet, get one of these cheap Fire tablets. Put Texture on it. That's really all I use my Fire tablet for. It's fantastic. Start your free trial. Texture.com/twit. You can read the latest issues of your favorite magazines today. Texture.com/twit. We thank Texture for their support. So you remember Boston Dynamics? This was the company Google bought briefly until they realized that Boston Dynamics was doing robots for the military. Scary robots like this running robot. I think this is the same robot, Atlas, that they showed earlier. One of the Boston Dynamics employees kicking, knocking over with a stick. And the robot was so nice and just got up and kept doing things, but I have to think it's kind of making a list, right? Look at it, it can jump.
I know, right. Like a baby when it does that. Like
yeah,
baby
I know,
sort
it's
of
cute.
Like thinks about it.
Would you like one of these Boston Dynamics for your very own?
What I'd like to know is how much range does it, I mean, you know, how much of a battery does that thing have?
90 minutes.
90
not that specific one, but the one they're about to sell, 90 minutes.
In 2019, they announced this at TechCrunch Disrupt this week. Boston Dynamics is going to start selling their dog.
That's the 90-minute one.
Spot Mini. This is a video that they posted on YouTube of it autonomously navigating their office and labs. Now, they had to run it through once to get an image. So the robot, do you really want this in your house? They're speeding
well,
it up
here.
You've
seen the other video where it opens the door and then lets
you
the
can get
other,
one with a with an articulated arm.
Yeah.
Be perfect for pinching people. The robot, they say it's the quietest robot they've ever made. It's, I mean, I don't know how quiet it is, but it doesn't sound like a steam engine coming at you anyway.
No, just give me a canine.
This is autonomous. This is like an autonomous vehicle. This is like the DARPA Grand Challenge.
I'd rather pick up the dog poop instead of having one of these.
Well, Kevin Rose suggested they cover it with fur. I think that's probably... I don't know. I don't know if it'll look like this when they sell it.
I don't know
how
expensive
it'll be.
They didn't cover the little Sony dog with fur.
It looks dog-like.
That's true.
I don't know.
This thing looks scary. like a crawler.
Yeah.
Like a...
Well, wait to see this. You can't get away from it by running upstairs. It's just going to follow you.
Have you seen the Black Mirror episode, Hard Metal? Or,
not yet.
Heavy Metal?
Is it the new
it's
season?
From the latest series.
Yeah, no, I'm not caught up yet. I can't wait. I love that show.
At least it
Talk
does stairs slowly, so if you run up the stairs, you might be okay.
You could run back down, yeah.
And then kick it.
By the way, it doesn't go forward downstairs. It goes backwards, just like me.
So how much is this thing going to cost?
They don't say, but they do say they're going to sell it to end users in 2019.
I mean...
It's Mini Spot Mini.
This looks expensive.
It does look really expensive.
$10,000
Sounds
least,
like you
right?
know about this if you
at
said least. 90 minutes. Have you talked with the people?
I was just brushing up before we went on
there. The Google folks sold this company. They realized it's kind of creepy
owned
for Google
SoftBank
to own.
Now.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting. SunSun, Masayoshi Son, who has pledged a $100 billion investment in Silicon Valley Tech.
$100 billion.
He's already spent $30 billion of it. He bought Sprint. Is now the owner of these scary robots.
He also bought a big chunk of Uber.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's got money to spend.
He bought about 15% of Uber.
Is it interesting? I don't really understand where all that money came from. SoftBank was originally a software distributor, I think, right? That's where the name came from.
Yep. Owner of Ziff Davis.
They bought Ziff Davis, I remember, yeah. I was still working there when we had to call him SunSun. By the way, that sound, I'm not making baseball caps for everybody in the audience. That's the Spot Mini still running around. Does sound like an embroidery machine, though.
I mean, it's cute. I don't know. It's growing on me after a
really?
Bit.
It doesn't have any personality.
I've always wanted a robot dog. I'm just...
Really, the technology's kind of impressive, right? And those legs, do you see how they went sideways, too? They don't just go forwards and backwards. I am Spot
What if it had John Legend's voice? Now how much would you pay?
I don't... Oh, John Legend.
Give her a break, Leo.
Give John Legend a break.
Give John... What is it? Leave Britney alone?
Leave Britney alone.
Leave John Legend alone.
No. I think we're done. I think we're done here. Hit the two-hour mark, if only. Hit the two-hour mark. Anything anybody wants to say about any of the issues we've talked about today? Speak now or forever.
A bunch more Tesla executives are leaving.
Yeah, what's going on? Okay, since we're here.
Since we're here.
We can talk, you and I. What's going on with Tesla? I missed the Elon Musk conference call.
Elon is a very hard person to work for. I mean, I've been covering Tesla for over a decade. You know, I did my first drive in the Roadster back in January of 2010, or 2008. I mean, and you know, I interviewed Elon a couple of times back in the day, and I've known a bunch of people that have worked for him over the years, and he's a very hard person to work for, and when things go wrong, you know, when he pushes you to do things in a certain way and you do it, you tend to get thrown under the bus. And so Doug Field, who's the VP of engineering, who had previously been at Apple, you know, he's taken a lot of flack of late for the Model 3 production issues, and he has taken a leave. He hasn't officially left the company, but he's on leave for now.
Probably tired.
Exec whose name escapes me at the moment, but he's the chief regulatory interface executive, deals with NTSB and NHTSA on safety issues. He left this week.
Tesla's also got a huge burn rate.
Mm-hmm.
They could easily run out of money. I don't know how well they can go back to the market, the equity and the VC markets, to get more money. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the issues there is that Elon owns about 22% of the shares in Tesla and about the same percentage of SpaceX. And he, you know, the way the share structure is set up, you know, he has a lot of voting control.
Right.
And so he doesn't want to dilute his share. So every time that they have gone back to the markets, you know, back in 2011, you know, he said that, okay, we're good now. We're never going to have to go back to the capital markets.
That.
And since then, they've done like 7 or 8 capital raises for over $11 billion.
Yeah.
And every time that they've gone back to the markets, you know, he's had to buy up a big chunk of that himself in order to maintain his shareholding level.
Right.
And so he has had to personally borrow somewhere around $800 million in order to buy shares because most of his wealth is tied up in the shares. So he doesn't have that kind of cash laying around.
Yeah.
And so he's had to borrow money from the investment banks and, you know, pledge his shares as collateral.
Should people stay away from buying Teslas at this point? You told me not to buy a Tesla, and I'm glad I like my Tesla. But at the same time, if the company's about to go under,
the company's not going
to
go away.
It's too big
entirely.
To fail.
Well, I don't like to use that phrase. The Tesla brand is not going to go away.
Right.
Even if Tesla
GM would
ends
buy
up
it, or...
well, it won't be GM. My bet is on Volkswagen.
Interesting.
To buy the brand.
Hmm.
If they go into bankruptcy,
they kind of tarnished the Volkswagen brand a little
bit.
Well,
and that's the thing. I mean, one of the reasons why I like the idea of
the brand's a good brand. Right?
I think Volkswagen might do it. Is because you know the goodwill that they would earn from preserving Tesla
might overcome the diesel gate.
Possibly. Yeah.
Did you play Carson? I wasn't here when Elon berated an analyst on his conference call. Did you play it on Twit when I was gone? All right, here, let me play it just because you haven't heard it yet. Actually, this is CNN Money. Maybe there's just music on it. I want to hear the call.
And so where specifically will you be in terms of your capital
next.
Requirement?
Next. Boring bonehead questions are not cool. Next.
Boring bonehead questions.
And in the next 5 minutes, the share price dropped by 5%.
But Elon said, and there was a whole back and forth on this, that guy was he shorting Tesla, or there was some,
no?
He was a there was a reason why he didn't want to talk to that guy.
There were several analysts that he didn't want to talk to,
but the guy was asking about his capitalization,
legitimate questions.
Yeah,
they were perfectly. He didn't like the questions, but that doesn't mean they were illegitimate questions.
Next,
yeah.
Okay. All right. I still like Elon. I don't know why. Maybe it's me. Well, maybe I'm a fool.
I've said this many times.
You know, I think Elon is a tremendous visionary, and he has done more to advance the idea of the electric vehicle.
We wouldn't have all these companies, including Audi, VW, and Jaguar, and Cadillac, and making electric cars if Tesla hadn't paved the way, right?
Right. But I also think that he's a terrible manager, and he should not be the CEO
of the
company.
Maybe that's the case.
I think you know, he should be the chief visionary officer or something like that. But he needs a Tim Cook to run the company.
A nice guy with
and better labor practices.
Accent.
Has he ever had a Tim Cook?
No.
Does he refuse to hire one?
Yeah, he doesn't want to cede that much control to anybody.
We're running out of time. We didn't get to GDPR, but May 25th GDPR goes into effect. We're not going to do it today. We'll do it next week. Because we're going to be then right up against the deadline. But already, clout, the social media, remember clout? What's your clout score? The social
the freebies
media.
Freebies weren't good.
They went out of business. Or they say, we're going out of May business. 25th. Coincidentally, May 25th, the day GDPR becomes law.
I put my final clout score on my Twitter profile in the morning.
Can I find it still?
Did you have anything good free thing waiting? Like a pack of Cheez-Its or something?
Never got anything
like a free
clout.
McDonald's or something?
Do you have to sign up to get your clout score?
Yeah, you have to give him access to everything. Everything.
I had my clout score. It's just vanity, right? That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day when that mattered.
Well, it won't matter in about a week. Unroll.me, another stellar visionary out of Silicon Valley, the company... And I signed up that was promising to unsubscribe you from all your newsletters.
I brought it to the arena.
Roll them up into a digest. Turned out they were just selling that data to marketers, including Uber. They're not going to be available for EU citizens starting May 25th. Interesting.
Do you think that's why cloud is disappearing then? Not that there's been a reason for cloud to exist for like the last...
blame it on GDPR.
For the last couple of weeks, I've been getting emails every day from various companies, you know,
Google,
updates in
Facebook,
their terms of service.
Same.
Because we care about you, we're updating our terms of service.
Yeah.
You know, and for all of that, I'm grateful to the EU, but at the same time, this is a significant burden to every business with a website, every business that does a mailing list.
You know what? If these companies are going to abuse the data that we've given them, then
it affects companies that don't abuse the data too.
Yeah. And tiny companies.
My company.
What if Flo wants your data?
Do any of you have a mailing list? You have to read up on GDPR and now make it compliant, including stuff you probably already do, like letting EU customers delete their information. But still, there's some debate, and according to GDPR, there's some debate over IP addresses, whether that's personal information. GDPR says it is, which means every website practically in the world, which keeps logs, is going to have to now update its technology. Google Analytics is going to have to change. I mean, this is going to be really interesting. We'll cover it a little bit more next week because we're out of time here. I don't want to keep you. Thank you very much. Harry McCracken, it's always a pleasure. FastCompany.com. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it. Come by and say hi.
Such a pleasure to see you. And Marie. He always brings Marie with him. Hi, Marie. And Marie always brings that McDonald guy with her. At photo on the Twitter. Did you post some good pictures, Michael? Yep. Michael McDonald is our unofficial.
O'Donnell.
Michael O'Donnell. What did I say? Donald?
Mick.
Yes,
McDonald.
Like
O'Donnell.
It's because I mentioned McDonald's. Yeah. Now you're
thinking of McDonald's. Michael O'Donnell. Thank you. I say it wrong every time. I've known Michael for 20 years practically. And I say your name wrong all the time. Also, thanks to Florence Ion. I got your name right. Oh, that flow on Twitter. You'll see her every Tuesday night Ron and Jason on All About Android. And what a great... If you hadn't listened to All About Android this week, you recorded it.
That was a
Google.
Fantastic interview.
Thank you.
What a great show. Everybody's got to listen to that.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a great show. It was a great opportunity, and I'm happy to let us do it again for second year in a row to talk to them and have them on camera to talk to Stephanie South Cuthbertson.
They listen to All About Android. That's why.
They do.
The Google folks know
which
you
makes
well.
Me very happy.
I know. Me too.
It does give me a little bit of...
Yeah, that's nice. They're probably listening to material, too. I'm not saying they don't.
We do have some
A lot of Google developers around.
You've even got some material alumni at Google.
It's true.
Who?
Yasmin Evian.
Yes.
She went to Google?
Yeah.
Yeah. She went to Google.
Well, so you've got an insider now. You got somebody inside. You can pry information.
I try not to put my friends in those positions, you know.
No, I'm with you. Sam Abu El-Samed, great to have you. Analyst from Navigant. Anything you want to plug?
You can find the research reports that we do at NavigantResearch.com. We publish syndicated reports that anybody can purchase, and also we've got a blog there that all our analysts contribute to.
Nice.
On a wide variety of topics. We also do custom research if there's something that you need that we don't have a syndicated report for. And you can find me at Forbes in the auto section and at Automotive Engineering Magazine and at the podcast I do with my friend Dan Roth.
Okay, let's not get greedy. You just kind of, you only get a few minutes. This isn't the Howard Stern show. What's the name of the podcast?
Wheel Bearings. It's wheelbearings.media.
I like it. Wheelbearings.media. You're great. It really is always a pleasure. And thanks. Sam brought up, as I said, the Cadillac CT6 and got to drive it. We're going to have a piece on that on Saturday on the new Screensavers. Your guys are pretty brave. You didn't realize this. Because probably we didn't tell you, but this was episode 666.
Filmed on the 13th.
Filmed on the 13th.
A lot of number play.
The mark of the beast. I don't know. I don't believe any of that stuff. I don't even think. Where did that come from, the 666 thing? I think it came from The Omen, right? It's like Hollywood made that up.
Probably.
I don't think that's real.
It's okay. I'm into it. It's all right. Yeah. Just give me something.
It's according to Wikipedia. It's the number following 665.
Oh.
And preceding 667.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
Book of Revelation. We have the Bible to blame.
It's the number of the beast.
It's the Bible we have to blame for that.
I think, though, if you read the actual quote, it's not that clear.
Well, and I think the thing that I've heard is that there's some debate about the translation from the original Aramaic.
Yeah. Right?
You know, about what the number should actually be.
Mm-hmm.
Could be anything from 665 to 667, somewhere in that range. So maybe next
tomorrow.
It could
be 6.66.
Exactly. Next
week's
show.
Could have been a freckle there that they missed.
Maybe we already did it. You never know. Yeah, that's right. There was a dot on the page. A little spot of ink.
You're 2/3 of the way to 1,000.
There you go. I promised to retire on episode 1,000, so I'm 2/3 of the way to retirement. No, actually, I don't think I will. I changed my mind. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We had a great studio audience, as I said, from all over the world. You guys were fantastic. If you want to be in the studio audience, easy to do. Just email tickets at twit.tv. Those are free. And we'd love to have you in studio. If you're watching live, you can watch the stream at twit.tv/live. And if you do that, you should also be in the chat room. Right, Osned? Right. irc.twit.tv. If you don't want to watch live on-demand versions of all of our shows, are available at the website, audio and video. I know it's easier to listen to audio, but if you have time, sometimes it's fun to watch. We make them both available. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, Overcast, Pocket Casts, iTunes, Google Play. In fact, subscribing is the best. That way you'll get every episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit. Oh, happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Doing the twit.